Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Our story, and everyone is dead from AIDS. It took from me my best friend, my only true pal, my only bright star. Well, I'm gonna march on Washington, lead the fight and charge the brigades. There's a hero inside of all of us. I'll make them see everyone has AIDS. My father, AIDS. My sister, AIDS. My uncle and my cousin and her best friend.
AIDS, AIDS,
the gays and the straights and the whites and the spades. Everyone has AIDS. My grandma and my dog are all blue.
AIDS, AIDS,
the pump has got it and so do you. Come on everybody, we got quilting to do. We're gonna break down these barricades. Everyone has AIDS, 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 AIDS.
It is 29 minutes after the hour of 1, and this is the month of March of the year of our Lord 2011. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, looming high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. Hello and howdy to you on this Monday. It is Monday, March 21st, 2011, and welcome to Day 12. My name is Rick Emerson. I will be your host today. It's 503-2... What the hell am I doing? Different phone number. 503-505-6964. That's what it is. It's been so long. It's 503-505-6964. If you would like to engage with us telephonically today with whatever it is that might be on your brain, on your mind, whatever thoughts might be looming and lurking inside your head, screaming and agitating to be sent forth upon an unsuspecting populace. 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick at rickemerson.com. That is rick at RickEmerson.com or Dawn, D-A-W-N, at RickEmerson.com. The text box open on the website. You can also message via Skype if you like. That is Rick Emerson Show. That is our Skype username. Rick Emerson Show. My friends, my chums, my amigos, my companions, my fellow travelers on the road of yucks. It's 503-505-6964. Here's what's coming up today. So everyone, look alive. Penis Watch coming up today. Geek Watch coming up, and speaking of geeks, we'll talk to our good friend Mr. Aaron Duran of geekinthecity.com with today's Week in Geek. That's coming up around the 17 minutes from now, from this very moment. Ryan White, music editor from the Oregonian, going to be joining us via phone later on today. He's I don't know. He's up to his eyeballs in something or other, writing or newsing or whatever it is they do there. So he's going to be joining us via the phone later on today, around 2:15. That is like, I don't know, 45 minutes or so from right now. So Ryan White from the Oregonian. And let's see what else we have. Well, a little bit of a recap of the Book of Mormon, the musical, which I saw when I was in the teeming metropolis of Manhattan last week. So we'll get to that. Don Taylor. Hello, Don Taylor.
Hiya.
Also tracking the following headlines for you on this glorious Monday.
Well, a man says he was speeding because of Dr. Phil and aliens. The World Health Organization says that food from Japan might be a tad irradiated. And a man locks his girlfriend in a shed and throws cottage cheese at her.
Awesome. Less so for her, but more so for us. So all that's coming up today. Plus, as I said, the Penis Watch, Geek Watch, Weekend Geek, Mr. Ryan White, and more from the assembled intelligence and imagination of Don Taylor and myself and everyone here at the Emerson News Network, America's new home for chuckles. So thanks for joining us, and et cetera. And there you go. I have nothing. That's it.
Okay.
Exhausted all of the energy that I gathered up while I was gone. How are you, Don?
Oh, awesome. Never better. Fabulous.
Are you being sarcastic?
No, I'm thrilled to be here. Thrilled you're back. I'm thrilled you're back.
I don't know. You said it in a way that indicates that maybe there's a second meaning behind the initial meaning on the surface. There's the primary meaning and then a secondary and perhaps tertiary meaning lurking just below the still yet aesthetically pleasing waters of your exterior.
No. What you're hearing is basically my inability to actually have the words to express how thrilled I am that you have returned.
Is it because of my sparkling personality?
Yes, that's it. That the fact.
What are we
that
doing right now?
I don't know. That basically, I'm here. I'm glad you're back because of two reasons. One, I missed you. I enjoy our time together.
I instinctively disbelieve that part, but okay.
I do. I enjoy our time together. And secondly, because you know how to make the machines work.
Really? Is that really all it requires to find favor in the heart of Don Taylor at this point? Is to know how to press buttons in the correct order? I'm just some sort of a Russian space dog.
You noticed, though, that was number two on my list after right. I missed you.
All right. Well, fair enough, I guess. Okay. All right. Well. I'm just like one of those cosmonaut monkeys that is able to press flashing things as they light up in the correct sequence to keep the
right.
to keep the capsule from exploding long enough so I can be shot into the sun.
Well, that and we discovered, I think, while you were gone, that I am sort of the opposite of whatever, like you know how there's the horse whisperer? Like, if say there was a computer whisperer, uh-huh. I'm the opposite of that. That apparently my just sitting in the general vicinity of electronics makes them go berserk and wonky and stop doing what they're supposed to do.
So it's less whispering and more like a dissonant kind of shriek.
Yes, that sort of thing.
Okay, followed by a what's going on?
To the point where actually Mr. Robert Wagner came in just to sit here so that I had someone there.
Really?
Who knows what's supposed to be plugged into something. And of course, on Friday when he was here, everything went flawlessly.
Of course. Well, maybe because he's a whisperer.
Right. So Jim just being in the room sort of counterbalanced my whatever it is that makes things go wrong.
Maybe you should just ask for a lock of his hair that you can carry around with you as some sort of a talisman against computer failure or implosion of any kind.
A little bit of his blood in a vial around my neck like Billy Bob Thornton.
Seriously, I mean, it's just a Mac. I mean, basically, it's like an Etch-A-Sketch, basically, but with a cord running out of the back of it, so.
And yet, coming in and, having touched nothing, having done nothing, everything was working fine. I came two days that you were gone, I came in and it was just like, nice cast, no work. Things just were just not, me on the phone with Thomas Gill going, it's going in this thing, but it's not going from this thing to the other thing. I don't know why.
Never more so in his life has Thomas Gill wished there was some sort of a transporter device they could have used to beam himself into the studio. And just to do that thing from MASH where he just, first of all, he just slaps you, get a hold of yourself! And then sits down
And he just kept chuckling in this sort of superior way, just going, that's all right. Now just to...
Ma'am, is the computer
hold on,
plugged
I'll just
in?
Take care of this.
Have you tried rebooting it?
You just sit your pretty little head back and watch the cursor magically move around on the screen while I fix it by remote control.
He was doing that thing where he just, I was going to say he Skyped in, but it wasn't even that. It was like he magically just appears on the screen. He literally goes into like the tubes in Seattle and then pops out here.
Yeah.
inside the Mac, and then just sort of you see the thing scrolling around and moving, and and you're just sort of watching it. And did he do that thing of opening up the the text program and just typing "I am here" on
no,
the screen?
No, he didn't do that. It was just that thing. I was sitting there, and all of a sudden, I see the cursor moving around all on its own and opening and closing things and clicking on things. And I was like, "Well, I guess he's fixing it."
Which
now
is simultaneously calming and unnerving all at once, because you realize that, like, you know, you realize that a cooler head than you or me really is at the is at the controls. That there is, you know, someone, a sturdy hand is on the wheel, and yet at the same time, it underscores your helplessness. Mm-hmm. That you're basically just a child, just sitting there, just going, "Oh, please, somebody fix everything." And on the other hand, you realize that anytime he wanted to, he could just sort of, you know, he could just sort of teleport in via the internet from Seattle, just wreck the entire joint. So, well, thank you, Thomas.
Yes. And in the meantime, I'm like fielding emails and texts.
Was the audience supportive during your time of need?
Well, it was, I'd say 4 out of 5 were supportive. Actually, let's put it this way. 3 out of 5 were supportive. 4 out of 5 that actually communicated with me were supportive. 1 out of those 5 would just say things like, "You're wrecking the show!" You know, so I was like,
"I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh."
No, it's fine. I'd be like, you know, "You're kind of right." So, yes. But yes, and the other people just sending me those kind of supportive messages that could tell they just pitied me.
Yeah.
You know, like, it'll be okay. I like the people who said, "I'm sure you'll have it by the end of the week." I'm like, yeah, okay. So
yeah, so we have the two different, we have the text account or the chat account for Legion of News, and then the one for this show. The one for Legion of News, when I logged in, you know, it's like you get leftover messages, or you'll see like whatever it was that was typed last week or last, you know, the end of the show last Friday or something. So I log into Legion of News, and the chat box just says, I think I read it actually in the show, it just says, "Greetings, Rick. Glad you're back. Everything went flawlessly in your absence. Don't worry. There were no problems at all." And then I opened up this one for the Rick Emerson show, and I don't even know who it was. It just said, "Don't worry, Dawn. You're doing fine. Just just knuckle down. Just hang in there. Everything will come together." So, yeah. But it sounds like you ended on a stable note.
Sure. The way I look at it was something of a train wreck. But the thing is, it was like the
something
wreck
of a train
it
wreck.
It was the wreck of a circus train. So while there was
train
like
filled with pies and horns.
Yeah, flames and smoke and people screaming and blood and destruction, there's also jugglers and monkeys.
Okay. Somebody says I bought Dawn booze. I suppose that's a form of support.
Well, that's Rick Rutherford. Yes, he brought me whiskey.
Because that'll help things.
And then there was another whiskey.
That's basically tech support in a bottle is what that is.
And then there was that day you called in and Sarah and I were half in the bag when you called because somebody brought us beer and neither one of us realized that it was like 10% alcohol beer.
Yeah.
And we'd been drinking it.
For what it's worth, I couldn't tell you were drunk that day. afterward, I got a lot of messages saying, you know, you were saying that, you know, I seemed really, what did they say? After I get whatever day I called in. I think it was Thursday. No, it was Wednesday.
Wednesday.
It was Wednesday because it was right after I'd had this massive lunch, just this like 5,000-calorie meal, about which we'll talk in a second. But New York is a strange place, and I know that sounds like a big understatement, but I mean, it really, it's just strange. It's strange and in strange ways. It's strange and not in the ways that one would anticipate or expect. But just real quickly, so I called into the show on Wednesday, and I guess it was, I don't know, like at 2 o'clock or something here, so it was 5 o'clock in New York. So I was in the middle of like rush hour subway traffic, which is just sort of a unique kind of hell anyway. But I called in, and I was talking to you and Sarah and Greg, and I had not been able to listen to the show because I've been going from one meeting then to a lunch and then to another meeting, and then I got off the subway, and then I got off the subway to call you to you guys. And so I got these messages later saying, "So you sounded really great, and you know, you sounded like you were in a really chipper and great mood, despite the fact that everybody was drunk and destroying everything," which I hadn't noticed. And I guess it's really, in retrospect, it's probably for the good that I was not aware of that when I called in.
Yeah.
They made it seem like there were a series of small fires that had been set in the studio, and that while I talked to you guys, that there were fire crews in the back trying to douse the flames, and meanwhile, like, there were just rats running rampant through the hallways. And
no, it wasn't even really like that. It was actually one of those things where Sarah and I didn't even realize that we were as hammered as we were. Greg came in and commented that it's really weird being with both of you, and you're both drunk, and I'm sober, and we're both going, "Nah, we're not drunk." And it was only like after the show was over, we both realized, and Sarah hadn't eaten anything all day, and she starts like wrapping her arms around Greg going, I need to go get some lunch now. And I'm just like, I got another show to go do over Cascadia.
Oh, yeah, Ham-Fisted Radio. How was that?
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I had to get there early because we were actually recording promos first.
That's great.
So it was like me and Bobby sitting there going, hey, Bobby. Hey, Dad. Let's Ham-Fist Radio. You know, I was a little bit schnockered.
Okay.
But I did have something, if I can find it.
By the way, somebody does say that on Wednesday, you and Sarah were, quote, Scotty J. drunk. She's really taking it to a whole nother level.
For me, I was fairly drunk for me because I don't really get.
Were you Sarah drunk? Or was Sarah Scotty J drunk?
I think that's about it. Yeah, because I don't generally.
Are you searching for something?
Yes, I'm searching for something that I had set aside and for today, and I misplaced it. So you talk, and I'll bring this up later.
Hey everyone, let's do a radio program.
Hey.
It's 503-505-6964. So we'll talk to Aaron Duran of Geek in the City here in just a few moments. Ryan White from the Oregonian, Penis Watch, Geek Watch, all of that on the way. Yes?
I found it, yes. So this is from Friday, by the way, when I had Aaron Mish and Jim Willigan, and I was going to do a top five. And I couldn't find the folder that I had put the top five counting song in.
Uh-huh.
So
You were saying, apparently.
Yeah.
Is this why I got that message from Cheryl saying you should reuse the Friday's top five intro as like the always intro?
Yeah, so I have this to share with you now if you're ready for this.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So this is me and Aaron Mish. Right. And
imagine, if you will, that you're hearing the top five thing of...
We're just going to name the songs?
No, I have the songs. I just don't have the count.
Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous. Counting is the best thing to do.
My sketchy laptop playing this.
Counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
See, there we go.
Y'all sound strangely Soviet there for some reason. There's like a weird sort of Eastern European angular accent to your voices.
So there you go. So Cheryl liked that very much, and she emailed me and said, you should use that like every week. And I said, no, I don't think so. And she wrote back and said, I'm not kidding. I was like, I don't think so.
Wait, whatever you do, you should find something to remind you constantly of last week. We should find some sort of a talisman or a totem that represents last week's broadcast and just make sure that we play it every single day on the show to put you in the right frame of mind, Don.
I don't think I'm going to remember. I'm going to forget last week anytime soon, really.
Okay.
Well, let's see. I don't even know. I feel like I got all the stuff I should catch up on, but I just... but it's, in a weird way, it's like there's just so much... I don't know. It's try to describe it. Like, it's when people go on vacation and they try to tell you about how it was, like, it's just stupid and irritating. Nobody cares. It's like when you try to show somebody home movies, like, here I am at the Grand Canyon, here I am at the Cayman Islands, and everybody's just, you know, everybody's just wishing you were dead. So I, you know, there's not much point in me describing my trip to Manhattan, except to say, and I was going to take additional photos of my hotel room, but I figured the one probably sufficed, because, I mean, like, how many pictures of a stained floor do you really need to see? If you did I send that to you or did I put it on Facebook? It's on Facebook, I think, and it's I'll put it in the gallery for today too. I'll put it in the visual aid section. But I think I think the text message that I sent you just said something like my wife had booked me into a Tom Waits song.
Yes,
and it was a photograph taken from the opposite corner of the room, facing the door. And I mean, it was, now that I'm back in the studio, I can say that the room I was in was no bigger than one third the size of this studio. And I don't know how big the studio is. I mean, the studio is what, like 12 by 12, maybe?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. So, I mean, we're in a studio that's about 12 feet square. So my room was, I would say, just in terms of absolute space, in floor space, it was like one third the size of this. I mean, it was minuscule. And it was obviously the last remaining building on a street that was in the process of being gentrified. Because I got off I flew into, first of all, landing in goddamn New Jersey. And I know that it's easy to make fun of New Jersey. I know that New Jersey is an easy target, and it's one of those places that just invites ridicule. And so therefore you almost... It's like you almost hesitate to make fun of New Jersey because it just seems like you're picking on such a cliched target. It's like making fun of airplane food or something. But I got to tell you, New Jersey really is just, from the limited amount of exposure that I have had to New Jersey in my life, it really is just a hole. It really is just like an open sewer in which people live. New Jersey is best summed up by the fact that, first of all, It's like no matter where you go in New Jersey, and I know that it's part of the, what do you call it, the culture that they have on the East Coast, but it's just one of those places where you know that you're not supposed to stare, but when you're just presented full of, with a table full, or like a subway, or an air train or something, just full of guys in tracksuits who are all calling each other paisan and like hitting each other on the shoulder, it's like you just, you've been transported to some weird sort of Martin Scorsese, but like via like a Marshall's thrift store sort of hell world. I mean, it was just unpleasant in every way.
And people who are from New Jersey, by the way, are in some kind of deluded state of fantasy about where they're from. Because I remember I wrote a review of Kevin Smith's movie Jersey Girl.
Right.
And in the review, I took like an easy shot and I likened the quality of the movie to the fabled smell of the state for which it was named. And I got so much hate mail from people from New Jersey, all of them saying, New Jersey is lovely. Uh-huh. You know it's called the Garden State.
Yes. It's a garden just filled with that corpse flower that just blooms every... I mean, I'm not saying there aren't nice places in New Jersey. I'm sure there are. I've just never seen any of them. I've never been to any of them. I don't know where any of them are. This is probably not unlike picking on New Jersey. Again, I almost hesitate to do it because it just seems A, easy, and B, like it's just such a hack thing, like when a comic talks about, you know, how white people do this and black people do this. But it's probably a bit like picking on Detroit. I know that there are nice sections of Detroit. Our friend Keelan is quick to jump to the defense of Detroit. And I know that there are probably people in New Jersey who would show me the pictures or take me to places in New Jersey that were nice. I'm sure that that's true. That does not, however, change the nature of the sections of New Jersey that I always seem to get exposed to. Our listener Aaron in the OC just says, Jersey is a step above a fully loaded diaper discarded in the gutter. So that's not my assessment, by the way. That's our listener Aaron in the OC. I will just say that when I landed in New Jersey, I had a little bit of time to kill before my... Because you take like what they call an air train, which is, you know, it's like a shuttle that takes you from... in this case, Newark International Airport, to the subway system in New York. During which, by the way, a trip where you have to pass... This is what New Jersey does, New Jersey in a nutshell. Take an air train from the Newark International Airport to the New York subway system, which is at Penn Station. But New Jersey, of course, not wanting to be shown up, they have their own Penn Station. So you actually have to pay special attention that you don't get off at the Penn Station. I mean, how ridiculous is that? That would be like if there were two Times Squares, like Times Square, New York, Times Square, New Jersey, and they're right next to each other. And I think it's just so New Jersey can go like, we have one of those too. You're not so impressive. So I had a little bit of time to kill before my shuttle got in, so I went to a coffee shop. It wasn't like a stand or like a cart. It was like an actual coffee shop, not even in like the airport itself, like an actual standalone building. And I walked into this alleged cafe in New Jersey, and the woman behind the counter said, what can I get you? And I said to the proprietress of the coffee shop, I said, I would like a cappuccino. And she said, what's that? And I just said, never mind. And I just left. And that was it. And that was like the extent of my interaction with the people of New Jersey on this trip. So that's it. I mean, what is there to... I mean... What else am I gonna do in the city once I've had that exchange with somebody? F that. So I don't even know. I don't even know what I was talking about that got me off into the New Jersey thing. Blah blah blah. Oh, anyway. So then I take the subway, and then I take the subway to a pretty decent part of Manhattan. It was to the sort of the Upper West Side. It was like in the 70s. Anybody who knows New York, it's like on Broadway and about 72nd, which is, you know, like a pretty nice, thriving, bustling part of town. It's not like I'm like a New York native or whatever, but I've been there many times now. And it's like I have never had the thing of feeling like my life was in danger. I have never had the thing of feeling like I've never felt like I was about to be mugged or there was some, you know, people will talk about like they'll seize on an area like Harlem and they'll say, well, you know, you just as long as you stay out of Harlem, you'll be OK. They say, careful, removing all of the bass from their voice when they say it. Well, friend, as long as you're staying in a decent section of town, you'll be a bit. But, you know, it's like the last time I went to New York, Laura and I actually rented a studio apartment, because if you're going to stay there for any length of time, it's like getting a hotel is like, it's so unbelievably expensive that you're better off just renting a studio apartment. And there are people who actually will rent out their apartment. Like, they'll leave town, and then in the 2 weeks they're gone, they'll put their apartment up for rent on the net, and there are these companies that will actually be a broker where you rent somebody's studio apartment for a week while you're there. And we actually, the last time we were there, we actually rented a studio apartment in Harlem, which was actually, it was a great apartment in a great, the neighborhood was fine, no issues. I have never felt any weirdness there. But this was an especially nice part of town. I'm thinking, well, hey, maybe I've just really lucked into something. And it was like, and first of all, it sounded like it's at the absolute like ass end of a dead end street. So I'm walking down, it was on 71st. And I'm walking down 71st, and it was like, I'm just seeing all of these brownstones and these walk-up buildings. It was actually very nice. And I thought, well, this is fantastic. We've lucked into something with this $52 a night hotel in New York. Where, by the way, the nearest hotel to the one at which I eventually stayed, the nearest hotel was $275 a night. So that was the nearest, closest, and that was like the base, that was like the lowest, you know, the price you were going to pay. That was the entry-level price for any of the hotels that were on the street other than the $52 a night room where I stayed. So I was just walking and walking and walking, and finally I just see this place looming up ahead. And obviously the wrecking ball is just like a day and a half away from this joint. I mean, it's probably gone as of now. It was like one of those, you'll see in these in movies that are set in big cities sometimes, where there's the one holdout where it's like old man Withers doesn't want to sell because that building's been in his family forever. And so you see all the skyscrapers looming on either side, and then there's the tiny little building in the middle from the guy who just doesn't want to sell out because that building has been in his family since 1872. That's what this hotel is like, and it is very much like one of those hotels for, I think you called it the Hotel for the Gentleman Traveler. Like one of those sort of transient hotels with a yellow... It's basically the place where Elwood Blues lived, where there's just the old guy always sitting in the lobby, just stinking of cheese and death and, you know, and just... And it's like the other thing is, it was obviously a place where they would... where a lot of foreign travelers would be... they would be routed to by a travel agency or by some sort of a service that, like, you know, like if you're from Hutchsteigler and you're going to be traveling to Manhattan and you're looking for the lowest... You do that, everybody's favorite function, sort by price. And you sort by price, and you go, oh, look, is wonderful and cheap. And you get that. And the lobby, every single time I went down in or out of the building, the lobby was filled with Germans. So it was just Germans and old people. But I get there, and I check in or whatever, and I go up to my room. And it was that thing of, like, where I opened the room, and then I kind of turned in a circle trying to open the room more to see if there was somehow, like, I'd missed a second door. Or maybe if I had blundered into just, like, the closet part of the room, and maybe there was, like, maybe the room was in two sections. Maybe this is just a storage area for my room. And no, it was just, there was, so the room was basically just a bed. It was a bed and a little dorm fridge. I was actually impressed at that. A bed, a dorm fridge, and then a non-working television just sitting on the nightstand. That was it. That was the extent. And by the way, I don't know if I mentioned this on the phone or if I was actually just talking to Lara about this. But if you go to the web, first of all, the website for this place is so completely and totally disingenuous. Remember we were reading the reviews, I think, with maybe Anna Griffin?
Yeah.
She was here. And it was one of the reviews said, like, the photographs on the website are fake. I'm here to tell you the photographs on the website are fake. They are completely fake. They are fake. If not fake, they are at least heavily photoshopped. I mean, there is no resemblance to be found in the real world between the actual room and the room the way it is depicted on the website. The website, I don't want to mention the place by name, but I will show you when we're done here. I'll show you the website when we go to a break. The website just makes it look like this sparkling golden paradise. I should have known when I called the woman on the phone before I even traveled out there and I said, hey there, I'm going to be staying in your fine hotel. Do you have internet access or perhaps Wi-Fi? And she said, she said it like it was a feature. She said, no, sir, we have no internet access of any kind at all. As though, like, it was a big selling point. Like, it was a thing that really that I ought to be paying extra for there was no... But she said, but if you go to the website, you'll see that we have many other fine... She didn't say amenities, but we have many other fine features. You go to the website, it notes that the hotel has recently, quote, been renovated with alarm clocks.
Oh.
Here's the thing. That's not even true. There's no alarm clock of any kind. The website did say that they had been renovated with alarm clocks and that they now had irons in case you needed to press your clothing. First of all, no one in this building needs to press their clothing for anything.
They may have renovated with the alarm clocks and then people just stole them.
Or there was like a single alarm clock that like you have to ask for at the desk, maybe. So I went down at one point because I had a meeting to go to. And it's like, and people, and by the way, while I'm there, I'm talking to, you know, these people from, you know, these, you know, sort of large publishing concerns. Where are you staying? And I would just sort of bluff it. I would just go, well, I'm staying at a sort of economy place sort of on the west side. Like, not not wanting to, because I didn't, I just knew that if I told them the name of the hotel, that suddenly they would just look at each other and they would just say, like, heroin to them. Like, you know, that, like, I was staying there because it was going to be easy for me to get my fix on or something while I was in the city. At one point, I did go down and I did borrow the iron that the guy kept in a drawer at the front desk because I had to press, in fact, the shirt I'm wearing now. And, of course, there's no, I said, do you have an ironing board? And he just shook his head. Like, and I said, no. And he just shook his head again. And he never actually said any words to me the entire time I was there, the guy who worked at the front desk. And it was always the same guy. No matter when I went to the hotel, out of the hotel, when I left, when I come back, one, this Indian sitting at the front desk the whole time, just sitting, staring blankly ahead like some sort of doped out ironized Cody, just sort of blankly staring off into the middle distance. He gave me the iron. And so then I realized there's nothing on which, I mean, there's no ironing board, and there's no, it's not like there's one on the back of the door. So then I had to haul the broken television, and there's no room on the floor to put the broken television, and then also to, like, stand. So I have to haul the broken TV into the hallway while I iron my shirt on the nightstand, which then requires leaving the door open, because if I don't leave the door open, I can't make sure that somebody isn't going to steal the television, which they almost certainly would have. So I had to leave the door open while I'm ironing so I can watch the broken TV in the hallway so that it's not stolen and it, you know, doesn't get added onto my credit card bill. It's just, it was a many splendored place. It really, and by the way, the elevator was a freight elevator. There was no actual elevator for humans. There was just like a freight, and it had like a push door. Like you just sort of go, swing it up. I could have just pushed it open between floors. You know, I could have just, at any point. So
I stayed at a place like that in San Francisco once. I was with a friend and we were looking for, we just needed like one night in San Francisco before we flew out the next morning. And so we looked for like a cheap place. And we stayed at this place, the Marriott Express.
Yeah.
And I figured the prices are really cheap, but it's Marriott. And we get there and apparently what they had done is they bought two of these flophouse places across the street from each other. And we went and we checked in. And then when they check in, they after we checked in, they said, oh, you're in the building across the street.
Yeah.
So we had to like run. And of course, they're in the middle of the block. So we have to like run across the street with our luggage, like dodging cars. And we get there and it's like there's no elevator in the place. It's all walk up. We walk up to like the fourth floor. And it was one of those places with this room the size of like a closet. Like I think it was about or smaller than our studio here. But they had renovated, which meant that they put new carpeting down over the weird wobbly wavy floors, and they had crammed in there like two double beds, a nightstand, a desk, and an armoire with a TV in it.
Awesome.
So that you like had to like literally like kind of like wiggle sideways to get between the desk and the bed.
And that's for the photograph, or so they can tell you on the phone, like it's got an armoire, it's got a television,
right.
It's got a refrigerator. Yeah.
Yeah, it was horrible. And there were ants in the bathroom. Ugh. The bathroom was the size of a postage stamp. And then there's these cards on the table. Tell us what you thought of your stay at the Marriott. I'm like, do you really want to know? Do you care?
The best part is that, like, if you look
and
at
it. And it was like $79 a night.
Well, that, and the thing is, like, the size is not even that much of an issue, because, like, I know that in New York, like real, and like in San Francisco, but you know, New York size is at a premium. I mean, there's just no more real estate there at all because it's an island. I mean, as much as they always joke, you're not making any more land. I mean, there's just nowhere else to go but up. And you know, so there's that. It was just filthy. And I was talking to Siegfried, and Siegfried's like, you know, they sell this thing called a sleep sack, which apparently he said he uses whenever he travels a lot to Europe and like at hostels, which is basically just like a shell. It's like a shell of a sleeping bag that you zip yourself up in. It's like one of those like.
It's like a giant pillowcase for your body.
Yeah, it's like an Intel clean suit that's like a pillowcase. So you know, and I said I didn't know that those existed. So instead, I just slept fully clothed every night in the bed, you know, and just like I would hallucinate. I hope like just things crawling on me, you know. And but Lara told me, and we'll get to Aaron Duran here in a second, who's patiently holding, but with the Weekend Geek. But you know, Lara told me she's like, you know, well, you know, the thing is though, you really just have to crash there. Like you're in New York. You know, so like it's just a place to put your stuff and just a place to crash at night when you sleep. And I realized that here's why she is never allowed again to book a hotel room for me if I'm traveling. Not just because she picked this place in general, because it was just like a total fundamental misunderstanding. It's not even that she doesn't understand me. It's just that like she I think for that moment just forgot that I am not her. And that's the thing. That would work for her because she's going to be out all day, like, seeing the sights and just goes back just to get a few hours of sleep and then wakes up the next morning and goes out again to see more sights. I'm not a sightseeing kind of guy. Not a walking kind of guy. Not a tourist. I don't care to like walk 17 miles into the jungle to look at a thing. I don't want to take 500 subways to go to the top of a flight of stairs so I can look at an old thing that a guy once touched, you know, back in 1720. I don't care about any of it. And so really, it was like a place where I spent a lot more time than I think she would have. So in any event, so that happened. And blah, blah, blah. On the back of the, if you look at the back of the, if you look in the photograph of this place on the back of the door, the best part is the little sign that says, you know, but even the sign was miswritten. It just said, "Maid, please make this room now." And, you know, the point of that. So that was that.
Maybe that was the problem. If you hung that sign, she would come in and magically make the room larger.
Magically, zing.
Could make you some room.
Just hell. So we'll talk about all that here in you know, just a few. We'll talk about Book of Mormon, the musical, which I saw last Tuesday, which was freaking awesome, by the way. And I have a little Spider-Man, the musical story as well. So we'll get to that. Let's see. What else? Oh, and then I can't believe I can't really talk. I can't really tell this whole story right now. When I mean say today, right now, I mean like today or like any time. I'll have to tell the story later. But I had a little bit of a I had a bit of a celebrity encounter while I was there. I should just say it now because I almost can't tell the rest of it. So I'll just say what I can now, which is that I had a little bit of an encounter with Mr. Donald Trump, which is not a thing you really expect to happen in your life. So I had a little bit of a.
See, now I'm curious as to why you couldn't talk about it.
Well, yeah. See, and I thought about not mentioning it, but it's like then I can't not mention it. So at some point, maybe later this week. It's not like I have to wait until some statute of limitations runs out, but maybe later this week I can tell the story. I can't really tell it now, A, because we're way behind. B, just you know. Anyway, so maybe later this week I will tell you about me and Mr. Donald Trump.
Are you going to be on Celebrity Apprentice?
Yes. No. Anyway, so we'll do that later on. Without further ado, let us welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program. He's been standing by while I did go on bumping my gums and so forth. From geekinthecity.com, Mr. Aaron Duran. Hello, sir. How was your past week? We did not get a chance to talk last Monday. How are things?
Oh, no. Things are quite fantastic. We're still savoring our sixth-place victory.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So we didn't really get a chance to talk about the Pajama Bowl. And just let me real quickly here. Let me see if Cheryl Kanakoa is lurking around, and she's not. I don't want to be rude, but while we're talking, I'm actually going to text Cheryl and let her know that we're talking to Ryan White via phone later on today. I'm going to let her know we're going to have to bump Ryan White back just a few minutes here because I got a late start on everything. But we didn't really get a chance to talk about the Pajama Bowl. And so what you guys – we ended up – well, you guys talked about all this Monday, right? Did you guys recap this on Monday?
No, we didn't. Waiting for you to come.
Was Monday the what was the day that there was like a 4-second show and then it just – and then there was no more of that?
It might have been Monday.
Monday was the no Skype working show, I think.
Okay. So we didn't really get a chance to talk about this. But so we had the Pajama Bowl which happened last Sunday. And we want to thank everybody who took part in that. And, of course, we want to thank, Jenny and Rob and Scott and, and everybody who was part of the team. I mean, everybody who – it really does continue to just, you know, to in the best way, to sort of humble and impress us that everybody, you know, is so great and comes together for, you know, for what is a legitimately great cause. That being said, I just ended the Pajama Bowl in such a bad mood in so many ways. This is why I can't go to trivia nights anymore, because we were in first place for the longest time. I mean, for a couple of days we were in first place because we really just banded together and we're like, well, we'll show that Aaron Duran, you know, and we just, you know, got into first place. And then these dicks, these sons of bitches at the last moment, they basically did what they did last year, which is they just asked the guy who was running the whole thing. They said, well, how much is that Emerson News Network in place, first place by? And the guy went, I don't know, a few hundred bucks or whatever. And so then they just cut some massive check at the last moment, enough just to put them in first place. So they were like a last-minute eBay bidder who just came in and you know.
Nice.
Yeah, seriously. So next year, I mean, they're going to get theirs. They're going to get theirs, or I swear to God, we're going to pummel them into dust in the street.
You should just start saving the Cougarans now for using later.
There's going to be. I'm telling you, man. There's going to be such a beatdown next year if they do that again. And that is me, Rick Emerson, physically threatening you. That's not figured. That is a physical threat that I am issuing right now.
Because also, those were the people that all of their money came from their bowling team. One person on their bowling team had thrown in $1,100.
Yeah, they did.
And that kept them in first place for a really long time.
I mean, they didn't even really go out and like get other people to do it. It was just
no,
some
guy. No,
they got
no other donations.
Somebody there with too much money who just said, like, well, I guess I'll just put down enough to. So, in other words, and here's the other thing about that. They gave it at the last moment just enough to secure first place, which means that they didn't even do it because they actually cared about the team or the cause or the charity or the children or anything. I mean, we were, you know, wanting to be first place and all of that, but at the same but it also wasn't like I was just going to hold back a bunch of donations, you know, and not give them unless we needed them or something, which is what they did. So I'm just saying, you know, that is that weed bears bitter donated fruit.
Well, you know what? They'll get yours. The baby Jesus knows when you try to buy your way into heaven. He sees past their blues.
That's what I'm saying. You know, a rich man may not pass through the eye of a needle nor through the kingdom of the glory of God. So I'm just, you know.
Right.
And so you had been – and so you, here's the thing. We got second place. You guys came in sixth. But either of those is better than a tainted first place win. That's all I'm saying. What is going on in the world of geekery, sir?
Well, just a few things today. The first thing, a couple things that are local, but the first thing I want to talk about is for a couple of years now, ThinkGeek.com has done these kind of like April Fool's, you know, spoof ads. A couple of years ago, they did the Tauntaun sleeping bag that people just assumed had to be real. So they got such a reaction that they contracted someone and they made it real.
Right.
So it's the belly open Tauntaun that you call into and go to sleep on. And then the other spoof they made was the, it looks like a can of Spam, but it was the canned unicorn meat.
Oh, that was,
that,
and so
that they put
and they got such a response to them people that they said, well, I guess we ought to sell this.
Yeah, well, they've done it again. This time it is a plug-in attachment for your iPad or your iPad 2 that basically turns your iPad into an old school arcade. It's a same scale as an iPad. But it is a classic wooden arcade frame that when you plug it in, it has, you know, little pressure-sensitive buttons that, you know, touch the different points on the iPad where you basically can play Donkey Kong, Pac-Man,
fantastic.
Any of the old-school 80s arcades with, you know, the joystick and the two buttons and everything. And even better is it has a Bluetooth option that you can beam the whole thing to your TV while playing in this little miniature wooden arcade stand.
It's strange that
they
didn't
did as a joke.
And it's strange that the thing didn't already exist because there's like such a bustling, not even a business, but just, you know, there's so many people online that do the, you know, ROMs and emulators and everything for old school video games and arcade games and whatever. So I am surprised that it took anybody this long to create something like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, but what's funny is they did this as, you know, they did it as another kind of visual prank, which I'm beginning to think it's just a savvy way of the marketing team to see if they can actually create a product and make money off it.
So it's like a focus group. So they're basically just – they're under the guise of it being an April Fool's joke. They're actually just doing a mini sort of survey of people like, would you purchase this if it were available? And people go, yeah, we want that. And they go, oh, we'll make it then.
Yeah, and they probably have some metric that, you know, counts like, okay, this has been shared on Facebook 280,000 times, you know, this percent of that. Hey, look, we'll make money on this. Make it.
Here's the thing. I don't even know if that's true, but I absolutely believe that it could be true. So, well done for them if that's the case. Excellent.
Yeah. And then the other things I want to talk about are two events that are happening in Portland this week. First, tomorrow at the Hollywood Theater at 7:30 p.m., the Hollywood Theater, which is now, I believe, ran by Dan Halstead, the guy that
it
runs the Grindhouse Film Festival.
The Grindhouse Film Festival, yeah.
That theater is now his baby now. So things be happening at the Hollywood Theater. And he's kicking off the next Grindhouse series tomorrow night, 7:30, with a 35mm print of Dolomite.
Yeah.
Which is one of the finest blaxploitation movies ever made. Dolomite, the tale of a pimp, street poet, singer that is wrongly put away for a couple of years, and when he comes out, all his entire street cred has been taken away by another evil pimp. So Dolomite has to assemble his five female assassins and get his justice on.
The best part is that it's like Dolomite, and then I think last week he was showing Leprechaun. So, I mean, really, that just shows you it's a wide net that they cast there at the Hollywood.
And he's showing a lot of other stuff, too. I mean, he showed 127 hours last year. It's not like the Hollywood becoming, you know, a grindhouse, you know, kind of thing. I think he's kind of trying to follow, like, the Alamo Draft House style model down in Austin, Texas. You know, showing some art house, you know, some big, you know, some mainline films, but, you know, having this, you know, healthy crop of, grindhouse or low-budget, cult films that I think is a pretty smart direction for the Hollywood Theater to go in.
Well, because otherwise,
And it has beer now, which helps, too.
Well, and it's just, otherwise that stuff all just ends up being, at Cinema 21, which is okay, except it's just nice to have more than one venue for something, so it's not just all sectioned in one part of town where there is, by the way, no parking to be had, like, ever under any circumstances. I mean, the more theaters that can sort of expand their palette, their repertoire and show things like that. I mean, it is a thing where everybody wins, because that means, that you don't just have to experience all of your non-traditional theater through one venue or one outlet. And plus, Dan, he's obviously a guy who really loves theater too. I mean, he loves movies. He loves the old school theatrical experience of going in, sitting down, and seeing the coming attractions and the kind of cool sort of, charmingly threadbare look of the Hollywood plays into a lot of the eras from which the movies, come that he shows there. So I'm a big fan of that guy and what he's doing at the Hollywood. Awesome.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever sat down and talked with him. I mean, you think our friend, Siegfried has the creepy film knowledge. It's like apprentice and master when you get those two together.
Yeah, no,
and
he's...
Those two just go off on a tear and it's terrifying.
It's unreal. And so between Cinema 21 and then there's... I don't know if they still do with the thing at the what is that place on... it's downtown. It was on like Broadway.
Living Room Theater?
What's that?
Living Room Theater?
Not the Living Theater. The one that was by the Paramount, right downtown. There's that Regal Fox Cinemas.
The Guild.
Is that even still open? Do they still show stuff there?
It was taken over by the Northwest Film Center.
Okay. Okay, so we've got that. We've got Cinema 21. Then there's the Clinton Street, which actually shows, they show some interesting stuff. So I like the fact that we are getting more and more of these places, because that's really what's going to keep, I think, the business of going to the movies and paying $10 to see something. I mean, there's a reason why people are going to continue to do that. And it's not because you want to go see, Beverly Hills Chihuahua 5 in 3D or something. I mean, it's because you want to go see something that you can't necessarily approximate the experience of at home for some reason. So anyway, good for him. Awesome. Is there anything else going on? I was not able to make it to this signing for issue one of La Brujera at the Beaverton Things from Another World. How did that go?
Yeah, that's the Beaverton thing. The signing went really well. Sold some more copies. We are actually, there's a few copies that we're holding back because we have some publishers looking at it now. So there's a couple that we're sending off when publishers or editors request them. But for the most part, we have completely sold out. There are no more copies left.
Awesome. Excellent. Fantastic. Well, congratulations. Et cetera and so forth. We are running just fantastically behind here. So let's see. What have I done? Hold on a second. I've done something terrible. I've made a huge mistake. Hold on. I believe this is Ryan White who I'm putting on hold. So Ryan White, hang on. I'm going to put you on hold 1 second there. And I'm going to – let's see. I'm sorry. That was my fault. So we are running very behind. We're going to get to Ryan White here in a few. Is there anything else that people need to know about, or should they just find the rest of this at geekinthecity.com? Okay. There we go. Right. I guess we're just going to call that done. Awesome. There you go. I rule.
Did you hang up on him, or did he just leave because you said Ryan was coming in, so he figured he'd make room for him?
Well, Skype does this thing when you get a second Skype call, there's probably a way to change this, but I've never found it. Skype does this thing where it auto-holds, but it doesn't auto-hold like in the way that you think it would. You would think that if you're on call number one and call number two comes in, it would auto-hold call number two. It does not do that. If you are on Skype, at least in my experience, and call number two comes in, it auto-holds the call you're on and picks up the new call, which, of course, is not the way you want that to work. So it auto-holded Aaron Duran. Then it picked up Ryan White, and then I had to reverse it manually, by which time Aaron had, I think, gone, well, screw these guys, and it hung up. And that's Ryan White. So there you go. So as a result, then everybody kind of goes, well, now I've got nothing. So.
And I had my Skype issues on Monday, along with many other things. But it ended up when you called in, had you call Sarah, because I had to have you call Sarah because she has a MacBook. And I discovered I couldn't figure out why I wasn't able to make Skype work. And finally, searching on the intranets, discovered it's apparently a common problem with laptops and Vista and such that Skype will just mute.
It just doesn't work.
And you can't unmute it. You look, there's a little icon of the microphone, and it's got the little line through it, and it's red. And you click on it, and nothing happens. It won't unmute.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's
excellent.
That's delightful.
Fantastic.
Thank you, Skype.
You know, I have to ask, and when I say this, I don't mean like a tell me how great I am kind of way, but I mean just in terms of the aural fidelity, how did the call sound from New York?
It didn't sound bad. You got a little sketchy at times, and I think that was your connection more than anything else.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, we were hearing the gunshots and the traffic and the screaming behind you, so
yeah. Also that there was
catching everything.
There was a lot of background noise going on, and I had my plan there was so we'll just stick around here before we break because it we're waiting for Ryan White. Oh, wait. No, we got Ryan White. Aha. So here's what just happened. Okay. So when Ryan White called in now and hung up, it's because I had messaged him and I said, hey, we're running a little behind. Can we do 2:30? So he apparently called in and then saw his email and said, aha, I'm too early and hung up. Yeah. So we'll break here in a second. We'll come back on the other side with Ryan White. But my plan had been to get back to the hotel because what I brought with me to New York was I brought this Plantronics headset that I have, which is the same one I use for my voice recognition software, which has great sound. And it also goes into my iPhone. And I thought, well, that, you know, and that way I can do like a long call if I want to. And I don't have to use the sort of, you know, the little thing where I'm holding the little, you know, the dangly microphone on the cord up to my mouth or whatever. But I did not make it back in time. So that I just like randomly got off the subway like, it, I don't know. 125th or something when it was time for the call into the show. And so, yeah, so I, when I talked to you guys, I was standing in the corner of a very, very busy intersection at rush hour using the Skype on my iPhone, which I think I had never before used. And then, yeah, didn't have the decent microphone. So I have that, like, the kind of skull candy microphone where it's like the mic on the dangly thing that comes out of your hand, holding it up to my mouth, you know, so to try to block out all the outside noise. And then I had set an alarm for myself saying, like, call into Dawn at, you know, 150. Which I only hit the snooze button, not the off, and so then every 5 minutes it would interrupt the call by ringing again, and I would try to hang it to turn it off, and then I would just hit the disconnect button on the call. It was awesome. It's the best day ever. All right. Well, we should do this. We'll take a break. We'll come back on the other side. We'll talk to Mr. Ryan White from The Oregonian and so forth. Still to come today, Penis Watch, Geek Watch, and we'll talk a bit about Book of Mormon, the musical. So hang tight. We will continue on the other side. Somebody just says, that's what you get for using Windows Vista. I learned my lesson long ago.
Yeah.
Is Windows Vista the one that preceded Windows 7?
Yes.
Windows Vista is not the newest one. It's the one that's one back now.
Right.
Have you thought of it? Is Windows 7 also, is that going to be like a different way to F you, or is it fix anything?
At this point, considering my my laptop is held together with duct tape and my DVD drive doesn't work and my battery is like won't recharge anymore, now I'm just basically holding on until I can find the cheapest, decent, refurbished Mac laptop that I possibly can. So if any listeners have a line on a really super cheap used MacBook or iMac, then I'd be thrilled because this baby's like about 8 years old now, and it's running out.
There's actual literal duct tape holding sections of that together.
One of the hinges broken, so I have it. It has duct tape on it.
Awesome. Okay. Well, back after this, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Radio. Rock, rock.
to the Emerson News Network.
This is Dawn Taylor.
Hello. A North Carolina man who led deputies on a high-speed chase across Rowan County late Wednesday told authorities that he was driving over 120 miles per hour and eluding police because Dr. Phil told him America was under an alien invasion. Richard Donald Blanchette, 21, of Salisbury, North Carolina, admitted to police he was smoking a synthetic marijuana called Mr. Nice Guy Herbal Smoke Blend prior to the chase. Authorities originally responded to Blanchette's home around 7:45 p.m. after receiving a report of a combative patient. While Deputy McHone was en route, Blanchette left the home in a burgundy Jaguar and nearly collided with emergency services who were on their way to the home.
So it seems like the Mr. Nice Guy part of this may at least have been overstated in terms of the branding of the of the synthetic drug.
Yes, I...
What is the point of smoking a synthetic marijuana unless it's the legality of it is...
Right. You can just walk into a...
Where was this at?
North Carolina.
It seems like probably everywhere you can... I mean, really, does anybody actually get arrested for just smoking weed anywhere that's not Las Vegas at this point? I mean, Las Vegas, I think, is the last place that really cracks down on that. It seems like the time and trouble it would take you to find Mr. Happy's Puff Puff Magic Joy or whatever the hell it's called, it probably would be disproportionately spent.
Hmm. Well, anyway, the cops followed the car through a church parking lot. He drove through a ditch and then sped off, leading the deputies on a chase that exceeded 120 miles per hour. Finally, later in the chase, he slowed to about 10 miles per hour and then came to a stop. They attempted to approach the vehicle to get him out, and then he yelled something at them and then took off again. When they finally did catch him, he was given field sobriety tests, taken into custody. And when he was asked, he told authorities he didn't stop for the policeman because, quote, He realized the invasion was real and the cops were in on it.
So this is now he was speeding. I'm so confused here. The original high speed pursuit took place because he was running from aliens themselves or from Dr. Phil?
Well, apparently Dr. Phil told him that America was under alien invasion.
Right.
And he told authorities he had seen a UFO when he left his home circling above him and he needed to go save his girlfriend.
Okay. All right.
So, and then they found the synthetic marijuana and the pipes. And
all right.
The
yeah,
such.
Synthetic drugs always seem like a bad idea because that's when you end up being – well, it's like there's that drug that everybody because the problem is that you get synthetic drugs that are designed simply for the point of circumventing legalities, circumventing the law just by dint of their chemical composition being slightly different than that of something that is illegal. Mm-hmm. And so you get stuff like that, like methadrone and whatever. And now there's that drug that's called it's called bath salts, which is the thing that they sell at a lot of head shops now. And apparently, and it's not like it's a real danger to me because, I'm not just going to smoke some crap that a guy at a head shop sold me, especially if it's labeled bath salts, which to me indicates that it's something horrible that they're trying to sell by calling it something else. Not unlike how our good friend amyl nitrate is now sold as head cleaner for your VCR, because that's a thing that you really need like a lot of at this point in 2011. And so the deal with bath salt stuff is, I guess the real downside, apparently it makes you high. The downside is that it gives you what they call a psychotic break. And so that's a thing that I think I want less than to be high in any way.
Yeah, I think the key is that if you want to do drugs, you have to commit to living a lifestyle where, first of all, you find and know people who will, sell them to you so you can procure the actual drugs. And then, don't take any half measures. Because I know that, in my youth, I being one of like a rather sluggish disposition, I tended to favor stimulants. And I once in an attempt to be less sleepy, I actually tried no-dose. And I got so sick. I got sick on no-dose in a way I've never been. I was never sick on recreational substances. I was running a fever and I got a pounding headache and it was that stuff is nasty. I don't know what is actually in no-dose, but it's horrible.
Yeah, it certainly seems less beneficial for you than I'll put it this way, that I consume a massive amount of caffeine. I mean, as everybody knows, all of various liquid forms and whatever. If the one thing I don't ever put in my body is like a no-dose or the Vivrin or whatever that stuff is just vile and it just gives you it does you get this huge throbbing cluster headache behind your eyes and you sweat and you tremble and you feel like you're going to fall down all the time.
God, it was horrible.
It's a bad situation. So I think you got to just as you said, you got to commit to just really living at 100% and finding a guy who's going to sell you the proper drugs, and then also just acknowledge that every now and again you're going to think that a fat man from the television has sent tentacled beings to rape you and your family.
Yeah.
There you go. On that note, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Radio Program from the Oregonian, music editor and stylish man of the world, Mr. Ryan White. Hello, sir. How are you on this fine Monday?
I'm good. How exactly did you get on that note? I'm curious.
On the tentacled raping?
Yes.
Apparently, we had a news story.
These are the things I miss when I don't show up.
Well, I'm saying, if you're not going to be in the studio, there's going to be some information that's going to slip through the mental cracks. Apparently, there was a guy who was running from the man. He'd been smoking some sort of a synthetic marijuana-like product, and it was going to rescue his girlfriend because Dr. Phil had told him that aliens were coming to invade and presumably to probe, which is, not like outside the realm of possibility. So, he might have just been acting a forethought.
And the first person to know about that stuff would be Dr. Phil.
You got to figure he acts in concert with many of those beings. So he might be in the loop on those things.
Him or possibly the mayor. I thought maybe it was. I noticed this morning on Twitter somebody sent an @MayorSamAdams message saying, "There's an illegal meth lab grow operation in my apartment building. Help."
Is this because of the cape? Is this because now that he's got some sort of like a tight fitting superhero garment he can wear? They're just going to tell him about they're like just spotting a mugging or something, so he can just swoop into the air and serve justice with an iron fist.
Well, the thing I'm waiting for is, because he's so responsive to people on Twitter, is for people in other cities to start tweeting at him. Like, Sam Adams, I'm in Detroit. There's a pothole. Help.
Maybe actually the mayors of other cities go, help, I'm in charge of running a city with a broken fiscal policy and there's crime everywhere. Sam Adams, please help. We should, oh my God, we should totally. Okay,
completely misunderstanding what they mean by calling him mayor man.
Here's what we should do. seriously, no. Here, oh my God, here's what somebody needs to do. Somebody, because there's the Stumptown Comics Fest or whatever is coming up in April, where they're going to present him with the Sam Droid the costume. We need to actually get on the stick here. Somebody needs to create a Sam sign that we can just shine onto a building occasionally. Like a gobo, like a super gobo with Sam Adams' face that we can just go vroom, and just shine onto the bottom of the bridge like those cluster lights that they always have down there.
So if you've got a pothole or you need a stop sign or there's a meth lab in your apartment building,
yes, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody, that idea should stay between us right here. All of us, everybody listening, us here in the room, Ryan, that should stay right here. And I'm going to get my friend Siegfried on that. He has access to – he knows people. So we're going to see if we can get – you know, the Leverage guys are back in town. I'll see if maybe they can, you know, we'll pull some strings, see if we can get them to just shine like the Sam light up into the clouds under the side of Big Pink or something. Awesome. Fantastic. How's life in your world, sir? What is happening in the fronts of music and art that we need to know about?
Oh, everybody that was there is recovering from South by Southwest, and those of us that weren't are trying to write our last blasted blog posts about coverage of South by Southwest.
So were
trying
you
to figure out who
you were not able. You were not able to. You were not able to attend. You were here tending to wife and family and career as you do.
I chose not to go this year, and it's weird. I chose not to because I found it so unmanageable last year that I thought, you know, I would be able to see more music and get more out of, say, going to Coachella, which I'm going to go to next month instead. But then it started up, and I was getting, you know, texts and emails from friends that were down there, and they were all saying it was just, you know, overwhelming and unwieldy and awful, but they were having the best time. And I'm just, you know, going, I'm not going to skip this ever again, in part because there was nothing going on last week.
Has it become
everybody
one of those,
was in Austin.
Has it become one of those things where it's like, I want to say like Sundance, but it's just where there's just so much stuff going on. Is it that there's so much stuff going on at the same time, or is it just that the ancillary aspects of South by Southwest, like all of the parties and, you know, whatever and side things are now kind of clogging up the schedule of trying to like get to go see stuff?
It's a little bit of both. There were, as I was reading this morning, there were officially 2,400 bands there this year and 36,000 people with wristbands or badges.
Jesus.
And that doesn't count the hundreds of bands that come in and play off-the-book shows,
right,
and the thousands more people who show up and go to the day parties and the off-the-book shows that you don't need a wristband or a badge or anything else to get into. And so you end up with this confluence of, you know, probably 50,000 plus music fans, 3,000 plus bands, spring break, St. Patrick's Day, and Austin, Texas. And it's just, it's unbelievable.
What is the process by which bands or artists get booked to play there? Is this a thing where, like, is it like an open submission like Sundance where literally anybody can send in like a CD or an MP3 or something and say, hey, we rock, and then they go through and they, or is there some sort of a, I mean, how do they pick the lineup?
Yeah, I assume, and I don't know for certain, but I assume that there are certain bands that are invited, and there are a lot of bands that apply and then make the cut. I mean, I know plenty of people who have applied and don't make the cut and then go down there anyways and play, you know, 12 shows in 4 or 5 days.
So was what did you hear about as far as standout performers or, you know, bands, people who really were, you know, either unexpectedly great or were not even really known until South by Southwest? Anybody really stand up and above the pack?
Locally, Typhoon seems to have actually really busted through the noise. They, on one of the first days, I think it was the day one wrap-up, the NPR music folks spent some time on their podcast talking about them. And before the week was over, they did a tiny concert for NPR music that you can go watch and see on their website. And apparently they played just a great show in one of the churches there the other night and just brought the place down. They're this 12-piece band that plays kind of, you know, It's as much rock and kind of symphonic stuff as you can do with. They got 12 people, and you know they go down there in one van, towing their equipment. They've got a 15-passenger band tricked out with one table in the middle, and they jam all 12 of them in there. And they've just got a new EP out. It's really good. Their first record, which came out last year, Hunger and Thirst, was really good. And so they seem to have actually been one of the bands that pulled themselves above the clutter and the noise and everything else. The funniest thing that I found actually was, as part of NPR's coverage, Adam Cohen, who's Leonard Cohen's kid,
uh-huh,
and so NPR was asking the question, you know, is it worth it for a band to travel down there? And Adam Cohen had this quote where he says, it's either a mark of my career having gone so dreadfully poorly that I'm finally here, or I don't know. I'm not very happy to be here.
But that's
which sounds exactly like Leonard Cohen.
I was going to say that. What else would you expect from somebody the last name of Cohen? Just how do you feel about it?
Well, I don't know. I'm sort of indifferent, bordering on melancholy about the whole thing. And then you just go, "You're awesome."
I have to derail this for a second. I have to tell you that, so I was in, New York this last week, and on Thursday, I was having lunch, and it was myself, and then it was my friend Lisa, who is, she lives in Washington, D.C., and then, or I'm sorry, Virginia, and then it was, two people from New York, and so we're all having lunch. And I never realized, largely because it's because I wasn't enough of a fan to really sort of to track this kind of a thing. I did not, and I know this makes me sound stupid. This just sounds so painfully naive. But I mean, I knew that the Decemberists were a successful band, but I always pictured them as being a really, really successful niche band. In other words, really, really big, but still almost kind of a cult artist. And maybe it was just the company that I was in, or maybe not. But at one point in the conversation, all of us at the table, everybody started talking about the Decemberists. And I have to hand it to you, actually, because I wasn't trying to pass myself off as sort of more of a fan than I was, but I actually was able to say the thing that you said. I said, well, you know, I said, and I actually gave you credit for this. I said, you know, my friend Ryan White, who writes for The Oregonian, described the new record as being very much like a Decemberist record for people who've always wanted to like the Decemberists. And I said that I had been kind of in that camp for a long time. And it just triggered this long, long discussion about the Decemberists and their career and the new record versus some of their older stuff at the table. And I think that I had never really fully appreciated until that conversation exactly how big and how huge they were in certain sections. I always viewed them as being, again, sort of a massive cult band. But whatever knowledge that I had that I was able to sort of like contribute to the conversation with, I owe totally to you. It was without you, I would have been completely adrift in that conversation, just floating hopeless through a sea of references that went over my head. So thank you for giving me a little bit of cultural relevancy that I could actually take into the conversation with me.
You're very welcome. Actually, it's funny you say that because, you know, I looked at Colin Malloy's Twitter page the other day, and every time that I look at it, I'm a little bit amazed that he had 1.2 million followers. I mean, that's just such a huge number. And again, I know that they're big, and I know a lot of people like them, and they've mostly sold out their world tour to date so far, playing, 3,000 to 5,000 seat venues. That's a big band these days. That's a high level of success. But, in Twitter followers is something, it's a weird way to gauge things because it's really easy and free to click follow. But 1.2 million is a big number.
Especially because I just picture that guy sitting around. I just picture Colin Malloy sitting at his home with, like, overalls around a pot-bellied stove a lot. Just sort of drinking a cup of Bosco and just playing a banjo or something. I will say that you recommend – I'm kind of working my way backward, having been such a big fan of The King is Dead. And so I'm listening to – The Crane Wife, which I think I almost picked randomly. I went to because I used the Napster service, and I think I literally just kind of closed my eyes and just picked and landed on that record and listened to it. And I'm actually liking it quite a lot more than I thought I would. So I have you to thank for kind of getting me into those guys, 10 years late, but still. So, what else was I going to say? Oh, New York Twitter. So, I know this sounds dumb, but the only thing I have, and I know that you said that you're actually so not even on the Charlie Sheen bandwagon. Did you do the whole thing about asking people to stop retweeting Charlie Sheen posts? Was that you who said that?
Yes.
So
yes, because everybody who cares is already following him.
That's the thing. And so the thing about it is either there was nothing happening on the Sheen front last week, or in New York there's just been some sort of willful decision just to not care, or maybe they just never cared because it's New York and blah blah blah, but he
right.
sold out those two nights at Radio City Music Hall while I was there, and he hadn't performed them yet, but he sold out two nights at Radio City Music Hall at $750 a seat, and I only know that because I saw a little bit about it in the New York Post or something, but I have no idea. Does anybody know did you guys talk about that at all? I have no idea what he's doing or what's going on with that.
They have not said it's the vaguest thing in the world. And what is great and smart on the part of Live Nation, who is doing this, is that they're selling all of these shows before he does one of these shows.
Of course. Well, yeah. It's the snakes on a plane thing. If you let somebody see it first, then.
I'll admit, when he sold out the first two, and I think it was Detroit and Cleveland, I was shocked because I was convinced that, he had all those Twitter followers really fast. But again, it's really easy to follow somebody on Twitter, and it's free. That when you ask people to start paying money for lunacy, that they wouldn't. And that was really, really just dumb on my part to think that. Well, that was one of my dumber moments ever. And I mean, the thing in New York is it makes, you know, high-flying, you know, hooker-laying coke fiends. I mean, that's been going on. I mean, they used to call that Wall Street. They still call it Wall Street.
And plus,
so I understand why New York is kind of blasé.
You got to figure, I mean, the thing about him having, I don't know, like let's say it's 1.5 million Twitter followers or whatever, he's got to figure, somebody has got to figure that, I mean, if just half of 1% of those Twitter followers, it's like the spam theory, you know, it costs nothing to send spam out. And if you get half of 1% of people who buy your garbage, then, I mean, that's, you know, that's $1 million or whatever. So he's got to figure if he can just get a fraction of those people on Twitter to pay that money, then, I mean, that's, you know.
And he seems to have.
Yeah, and I mean, and you, and again, Live Nation, which, of course, is Clear Channel, has never, they've never been one to misobserve an opportunity to make money. So good for them. I guess it is America in a nutshell in some strange, horrible way. Awesome. I know that you are up to your eyeballs in work, so we'll let you get back to it. We'll have you in next week or sometime in the near future, my friend.
Excellent. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. There's Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian. Awesome. Excellent. Yeah, I didn't even realize until I saw the thing in the New York Post where it was like Sheen sells out two nights at Radio, which I actually had to stop, and I did that thing of, and it was like, yeah. I saw part of it sitting in the subway, and I actually stopped and I picked up like the little snatch of the newspaper that was left, and I read it just to make sure, because for a moment I thought that I was just sort of, not even that I was alluded, but I just that I misread it, or just that I was reading The Onion or something by mistake, because it didn't seem possible. I mean, even now, just saying it out loud, it seems ridiculous. The idea that Charlie Sheen has got the two nights at Radio City Music Hall. I mean, like one of the most famed and fabled venues in all of the country, and that he's going to be there doing, you know, whatever. So,
and that people have no idea what it is he's going to be doing, other than he's calling it his Torpedo of Truth show,
right,
or tour or something.
It's,
so it's just going to be him, you know, like blabbing his crazy Alex Jones conspiracy theories and stuff, I guess.
He really has become like, he's really become like the face in the crowd, like the Andy Griffith character. I mean, he really has. I mean, it reminds me a little bit of, it's like a cross between Andy Griffith and Howard Beale in Network. And then that thing that happened a couple years ago where when Andrew WK was doing these like speaking tours where he would just like, it was like a thing of just like come and hang out with Andrew WK, which he did downtown at the Cleaners, which is that sort of open venue that's right next to the Ace Hotel by Clyde Commons downtown. And it was like, and our friend Peter from Nickel Arcade was there, and it's like, and it was like Andrew WK just like sitting cross-legged, like in the middle of this room with a microphone and just like rapping with people. And but that was actually sort of great because it was like a legitimate sort of grassroots thing that I think he just announced that he was doing via, you know, his you know, MySpace or whatever. And I don't even think he actually charged. I think it was just like, I'm going to be hanging out at this room. Everybody come on down and we'll talk. And but this is like some weird, I mean, the person I want to interview is not even Charlie Sheen. I want to interview like Charlie Sheen's manager or his accountant or his lawyer. Like whoever's repping him at this point is the guy that I want to talk to.
Well, whoever the person is, I think what happened was that he was going crazy. He got rid of his publicist, walked out on him. And that's when he was approached by whoever it was who like said, you know, Charlie, social networking. We get you on Twitter. We do this. Then we do that. And somebody is like working with him to like stage all of this step by step by step. And it's whoever that person is kind of a crazy genius who is probably selling Sheen on the fact that this is some kind of a career move, while they themselves realize that what they're doing is they're taking a percentage of crazy while the public is still hot to pay for his crazy.
Oh yeah, no, just wringing it like a sponge for as long as they possibly can. Let's see. I don't know if I have anything else that I should be getting through here. We have to do. We'll do a little break here in a second because I have to use the facilities. So we'll do that. We've got more news. We haven't gotten to the Penis Watch or the Geek Watch.
No.
So I'll tell you what. We'll take a break here. We'll come back on the other side. We'll do Penis Watch, Geek Watch. We'll talk a little bit about the Book of Mormon, the musical, and then I don't have a lot. I don't have any actual news as such, but I did talk to a few people who had seen the Spider-Man. Turn off the dark. Turn on the dark. Whatever it's called, the Spider-Man thing. For which, embarrassingly enough. And it just makes you feel like angry and awkward and sad and embarrassed and sort of irritated all at once, because there are like billboards and car ads for everywhere. everywhere you go in New York, there's something for the Spider-Man thing. Every cab has got like the little like illuminated sign on top, and they're all for the Spider-Man play. I mean, it's just the amount of money that they – which clearly is not going to work. I mean, there's going to be no – it's just going to be a huge money loser regardless. There's nothing they can do to rescue that thing. I mean, that is, I think, transparently obvious to everyone. But, man, the amount of marketing money that they are pouring into the Spider-Man play is just astounding. We'll do all that when we come back on the other side. So stay there. This, okay, my friends, is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Don't go anywhere. Back after this.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network. News Network.
No more. me guessing. I can't help obsessing. You come near and then you go. It's unclear. Should I keep hanging on now? Oh, come on, come on. You've been messing with my head for oh so long now. Oh, come on, come on. You've been messing with my head oh so long now. I can't take it no more. No, I can't take it no more. Yeah, I can't take it no more. No, I can't take it.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
So, Rick Emerson, how do you feel about a Geek Watch?
I feel fine about it in like 3, 2, 1. There we go.
Ugh, this high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to...
Just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but... Because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen on this.
There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
Dawn Taylor with your Geek Watch for Monday.
Well, the first image of TV's newest Wonder Woman, actress Adrienne Palicki, donning the superhero's tight-fitting red, blue, and gold costume has been smeared all over the internet. The 27-year-old star of the 2010 flick Legion and the 2006 NBC series Friday Night Lights, and avid comic book reader, she says, was handpicked by David E. Kelly.
So like when Jessica Alba was wearing the Han shot first shirt all through 2000 and, you know, whatever.
Yes.
Let's see. What is her name? Adrienne Palicki?
Palicki.
How do you spell Palicki? Oh, the internet's doing that for me. Never mind.
There you go.
All right. Now, I watched the first season of Friday Night Lights, and then it was just like being covered in sad, melancholy dust every week, and I finally just quit watching.
People kept telling me I needed to watch it and that it was awesome, and Eric Snyder particularly was saying that it's great and it always makes him cry and it's just awesome. And yeah, and I watched about the first 4 episodes and was just like, no.
I'm a huge fan of Friday Night Lights, the movie and the book both. And I suppose, and Lara is a huge fan of the series. She said that the series has actually become one of her favorite things. I just didn't watch it long enough to ever file away. The only person from Friday Night Lights who I actually remember who is notable is what's her name, who plays the coach's wife, because she's the same woman who I think plays that same role in the film, and she also had she was also in the 4th season of The West Wing. Okay, I know who this is.
Yeah. And you know, and
she's a pleasing woman.
She is.
In an aesthetic sense, I suppose. But I mean,
you know,
she's really the best they could do.
Yeah. Well, you know.
I mean, I think that's my response. It's like, this, that's it? I mean.
Well, it's a David E. Kelly show, so he'll whittle those boobs and hips off of her.
It's going to be blonde, you know, size zero.
In like 2 seasons, she'll be anorexic and just, you know, and all of her ribs will be showing. But Linda Carter was, of course, asked for her opinion, and she told E! Online, I think she looks fabulous. It's a new look, and geez, her body looks fantastic.
Now to be fair, I don't know what Linda Carter, I mean, I have no idea what she looked like when she wasn't in her Wonder Woman garb, so she was like, if she was like a skinny waif as well.
Oh, no, no, she was not.
I mean, I'm assuming she wasn't because it's the 70s, but I don't know.
And she was Miss America before she she became Wonder Woman. That was her entree into acting. And she was we liked our ladies curvy back in the 70s, particularly when they were Miss America, you know. So, yeah, and it's like basically a lot of the controversy right now is about the outfit, which is very, very shiny. And instead of hot pants, they have her in these long blue spandex pants.
All right, those are implants also.
And then
let me just say right now.
Well, she's also wearing an outfit that is just shoving them up way far. That's the other thing about Linda Carter. Linda Carter had, like, real honest-to-God boobs.
Well, actual cleavage.
And so they put her in a bustier so that it supported her breasts. This is the kind of thing where it's actually cramming them up so that it makes it look like she has boobs.
See, that's the thing. I never get that. I don't mean this, and I don't mean this to sound as crass as it comes out. But, I mean, if the whole thing... So when I say this, I don't mean, I'm just saying this is some like boob loving man.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is a microcosm of the whole thing to me. That if you're going to go to all that trouble of just like engineering some outfit and some whatever, just to, why don't they just hire a chick who looks that way in the first place?
I don't know, because this is very obviously one of those outfits, sort of like they did with. And there were other reasons to hire what's her name as Xena.
Lucy Lawless?
Lucy Lawless. Yeah. Lucy Lawless, not big and tall and very Amazonian, but also not a particularly busty girl.
Right.
And so, like, all of the cleavage and the stuff that she had going on was engineered by the outfit. And it's the same way here. It's like, you know, I'm doing this visual thing, which the audience can't see. But basically, her nipple is, like, here.
Yeah.
And nothing, like, the bottom two-thirds of this cup are all foam and filler. Just to shove what breast she has.
Well, and that's assuming that photograph itself hasn't been doctored, which it probably has. Also, you're right. She's wearing what looks like a Mylar balloon.
Yeah. And then the thing is, these spandex. If you remember, my husband and I were talking about this. When they made the first Superman with Christopher Reeve, there was the costume designer on Superman talked at length about how they had something like five separate sets of tights for Christopher Reeve to wear depending on the shot that he was in, because they didn't ever want you to see a seam in his Superman tights. Superheroes don't have seams. Wonder Woman in this photo has one big seam going straight up her crotch.
Well, but also...
And it's ugly and weird and distracting.
I see. I'm not distracted by that so much as I am distracted by the fact you should post this picture.
Okay.
You upload and I'll alter the gallery to show it. So this will be up at rickemerson.com/pictures. Visual aids for March 21st here in just a skosh. So that'll be at rickemerson.com/pictures. Visual aids, March 21st. I'm not distracted by the seam so much as I am distracted by the fact that the how do I put this? The place where the two legs meet seems a lot lower than where her area probably is. It's like they've added some pant there almost just so you don't think about. So you simultaneously think of and then don't think of her actual area,
well,
her actual genitalia.
She doesn't get. I know hesitate what to use the
no,
phrase.
No, I know what you're talking about, but I mean, they don't want to have an uncomfortable division.
But
there.
I was looking at that, and I was thinking, how are they keeping her from doing that? And I wonder if they have her wearing some kind of a cup, or again, if it's been photoshopped.
That's my
out.
Thing. It's like you just give her. I've never understood why it's so difficult to get there where women get the. And I hate that term. I hate that term so much. It's hideous. So I'm with you on not using it. It's just a revolting phrase. But the idea of just give them a cup, which just stops that from happening, and then whatever. But there, it's like they have actually lengthened the crotch area of her outfit, and yet her actual probable crotch is from the same place, I think. And so there's this weird, like, nether region there. So, well, all right.
Yeah.
All right. But well,
the bustier itself looks like it's made out of that sort of shiny metallic vinyl that they used to make kitchen chairs out of.
Yes, it does.
In the 60s.
And it cracks in the sunlight after like 6 months. Yeah.
It looks like something that you would want to use for tuck and roll in your hot rod.
Yeah. It's not like I'm all hung up on like the feminist aspect of Wonder Woman or whatever. I mean, Wonder Woman can be hot and whatever. Yeah. That's fine. But the thing about Wonder Woman is it like, you know, she's a superhero and she's whatever. And she's hot, but it also looked, but it was, to my way of thinking anyway, it was never made to look like Wonder Woman's power was like, In other words, you got the sense that even if she looked, you know, that she could easily look, you know, dowdy or plain or hideous or whatever and still be a superhero, yeah. That it didn't look like that was inextricably tied to the way that she looked. And this is basically, she's like a stripper that happens to be stronger than your average stripper. That's it, you know?
Yeah, and among the complaints that have been on the intranets the last day or so since this has been floating around, they changed the color of her boots. People are not happy about that. To blue, I guess.
They were red,
and now they're blue. Also, she's not wearing the star-spangled hot pants. And so some conservatives are complaining that
she's un-American.
That she's not American enough.
Well, you know what prompted that, though? This is filmmaker's own fault. It's because they had Perry White saying that thing about, does he still believe in truth and justice and all that stuff in the Superman with Brandon Routh film. So that was really, they're just asking for scrutiny at this point. Well, that's disappointing. Yeah. I don't know if people be disappointed, but here's the thing. I don't give a rat's ass about the Wonder Woman film or the movie. Or is it a film or
it's
TV show?
It's a TV show.
It's not even a film.
No.
It's not even a film. It's a TV show.
And it's David E. Kelly.
See,
so
that's
going to blow.
When you said David E. Kelly, I thought, well, that's interesting that he's doing a feature film. But it's actually a television series. So I care even less about that.
It's going to be awful. And it's probably only going to last one season. And everyone's going to forget that they spent this much time thinking about
it. Well, and why would you hire David E. Kelly to do that?
Well, I don't think you hire David E. Kelly. I think David E. Kelly has made metric ass loads of money for network, and he goes to them and says, I want to do a Wonder Woman show. And they say, okay, that'll make up for you having a show starring Kathy Bates because she's not hot.
I guess the bad news is geeks are all upset about it. The good news is I don't care.
Yeah.
So I got nothing. All right, there's your Geek Watch for Monday, March 21st, 2011.
By Grabthar's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next. Ooh, loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
Keelan weighs in and says, my complaint is she's just not that hot. There should totally be a superheroine where that is like her actual power. Her power is like just the magnificence of her breasts is such that it paralyzes evildoers. It's like, because I don't know what... Did what's her name, Barb Wire, have an actual skill? Did she have superpowers? Or was she like a Batman where she just had...
She was kind of a Batman.
She was a human who just had like extra, you know, she was like real smart and, I don't know, capable and
she
whatever.
Yeah, she had gadgets and things.
But there was no, like, she didn't have any actual... So there ought to be something where it's, you know, like the superheroine has, in fact, her feminine, what's that word, pulchritude?
Pulchritude
is just so substantial, just so overpowering that it just freezes the mind of criminals and villains everywhere.
I saw the new movie Paul this weekend.
Oh, that's the alien thing?
Yeah, it was written and stars Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. So it's another sort of in there, the same vein, I think, as Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. And it's directed by whatever his first name is, Greg Mottola, who directed Superbad. And so it's kind of this combination of the two. It's a really good pairing. They did Simon Pegg and Nick Frost said they actually literally chose Mottola to direct it, and he said that he wasn't sure he had. He said, "Have you seen my movies? It's mostly guys just driving around on road trips and getting stoned and talking to each other." And they were like, "That's exactly what we want because it's two guys in an RV with an alien,
right?
You know." And it's really very, very funny. But there is a running gag in it that they have done a book together. There, one guy is a comic artist, the other guy is a science fiction writer. And every time they show the guy Nick Frost's book, they look at the illustration on the front of the alien chick with three breasts. And whoever looks at it, they're always showing it to people, and they always go, three tits. Awesome.
Can I just tell you that not unlike the VHS tape I have somewhere in my basement where it's like the clown shows up halfway through just getting his basket weaved, and then that also has like a lot of midgets, and then, of course, Ron Jeremy. It's not in that same tape, but there's also some other porn tape that I have like deep in the labyrinth of discarded porn items or whatever, where there is a chick with three boobs who just shows up halfway through.
Hmm.
And I think it is like some cunningly done sort of, you know, like special. Like, I don't think they actually found a three-boobed one. Although... I don't really know, because it seems like if you got three boobs, there's probably, I mean...
I would imagine you would have seen a lot more video of her if she actually existed.
Well, maybe. I mean, unless that was a target market that they identified, but then recognized, unless that was just, you know, that was a niche that just was created and then failed instantly.
Or she just made the one video so she could, like, buy a car. so she could like drive to nursing school or
maybe
something.
Because you got to figure her marriage prospects might be necessarily finite.
Or she made the one movie so she could pay for the operation
to remove
the extra boob.
Okay, there you go. See, that's what's her name? Soleil Moon Frye should have done that before she got herself deboobed. She should have made like. I was speaking on behalf of men. Can I just say that I resent a little bit when chicks who get massive breast reductions like that don't have they don't think of the rest of humanity, and they don't have the common human decency to do some sort of a spread in Playboy before they get their boobs chopped off. I don't understand that.
Which brings me to the story right before you left. You were surprised. I swear to God, I told you the story about the chick I knew who had been in the movie with Ron Jeremy.
No, you never know, because I would remember that.
And she was somebody I worked at the Renaissance Fair with, and she had terrifyingly massive boobs, like the whole Soleil Moon Frye,
right.
Unnaturally
huge. I can't
huge.
Even leave the house.
Yeah, just like scary big. Like you looked at it, you just like, that can't be real. That
right.
has to be a practical joke. And apparently she had, what she did was she had breast reduction so she could do porn, and they were still fairly massive. But she had breast reduction before she did the porn. I didn't even know she was doing porn until a friend of mine saw one of those like ads. Like, there's a whole page of ads on the back of a magazine that has like photos of people that buy this tape, and she was like, "Oh my God, I think that's
Kathy."
Insert her name here, and so she sent away the $10 to buy the tape. And then she got it, and she watched it, and she was like, oh, my God, it's totally her. And so I went over to her house, and we watched it, and it really was her. She had a short-lived career in the late 80s, I think it was, as Medina, which was actually her legal last name. She was Lebanese, I guess,
or
Egyptian or something.
Was she an olive-skinned beauty?
She wasn't really that beautiful, but she did have massively huge breasts. And and there was just this scene in
porn.
This videotape of her on her back being
plowed by Ron Jeremy,
who had like her ankles up on like his shoulders, and her boobs were so huge they kept slapping her in the face.
Wow. Okay.
And it was so unpleasant to watch and so horrible.
Now, was it unpleasant to watch and horrible because you knew her?
No, because it was like, first of all, it looked uncomfortable, and it was Ron Jeremy. And, you know, it was, and he's not.
Legends of Big Boob Porn with Ron Jeremy. All right. And then it's, let's see, I'm trying to, just go. I'm listening.
Okay.
I'm multitasking.
Well, that's the whole story, is that I saw this thing, and it was just so kind of disturbing to see someone that you know. In flagrante with Ron Jeremy.
No, that was like, well, or just with, I mean, I would think
plus
with
it just
anybody.
It didn't look like she was having any fun at all.
Well, no.
Because she just, the position he had her in just looked really uncomfortable, and
and
it was him.
You know, and the thing is, and I got to say that, like, you know, Sarah and I have talked about this, well, first of all, I would imagine when you get into porn, you probably don't imagine yourself being boned by Ron Jeremy. I mean, it's, you know, in the 70s and the 80s, it's not like the guys were all like knockouts, because I think porn actors and actresses have gotten a lot better looking. I think, in fact, Ron Jeremy himself said that. I asked him in an interview. I said, have the women in porn and the men in porn gotten a lot better looking? And he's like, oh, yeah. He's like, it leaves the 80s behind. He's like, you know, the people in porn now, because it's more of a mainstream choice after what's her name, Jenna Jameson. And he's like, so people are much better looking in porn. But, you know, it's like even back then, there were guys who I guess were attractive, or they kept themselves in shape or whatever. Ron Jeremy, not one of those guys. Never been one of those guys. And I don't think it works the way it works. As much as they say that, like, guys are attracted to beauty and women are more about, you know, they're attracted to a man's personality or his power or his whatever, I don't think any of that makes Ron Jeremy really hot. And so you're just sitting there, and there's basically a guy who's a walrus on top of you just going, you know, and it's like you're just – and you're thinking to yourself, like, Christ, like, what have I done? And at the same time, it's like you're thinking, well, now you're running down the list of things that you can never do as a career once you've been on porn.
Yeah.
You know, once you've been in a porn film. The list of things that you can't ever have as a job is like endless. So I'll look her up later. Anyway, but Sarah and I talked about this when we went to the we toured the Angels' place, the swing club, and they gave us passes there. And then it's like she asked me when we went to the there was the grand opening for the club Sessa or whatever, and she went and Greg went and whatever, and she invited, you know, they invited me through, and I was just like, nah, I'm gonna stay home. But she and I had this understanding. We had this agreement. We're like, okay, now here's the thing. Obviously, and I think it went without saying that, like, neither of us is the kind to really go to a sex club and, like, be getting it on. But we had this understanding that, like, not only could we never, ever, ever, ever be in the room if that were to be the case, but I said, like, you know, like if you decide to ever like take advantage of like your visitor's pass and just go like hang out just to see the spectacle, or if I do, we agreed that we had to like let each other know because we could not even be in the same room as each other if there were people just like rolling around having sex, because it would just be too weird.
Yeah.
It would just be so, it would be just like such like half a step away from seeing your sister have sex or something, and it would just be too bizarre. So I can't, yeah, I can't imagine.
I went to a party once that was thrown by one of our local, you know, happy sex people or whatever it is. And
sex positive, Don.
Sex positive people. And in many ways, the whole thing was just a little sort of, it was very entertaining, but also sometimes a little disturbing. But the sex was going on upstairs. And Patrick was like, you want to go upstairs? And I said, why? To just watch people have sex? He's going, maybe we could have sex up there. And I said, well, and I was like, first of all, no. And second of all, there was a guy at the party who was like a friend of Patrick's that he just happened to be there. We didn't know he was going to be there. And he was an old friend of Patrick's, like some guy he used to game with, who I found intensely creepy because, like, he used to talk about his trips to Thailand and stuff. And I was just – I already found him creepy. And I was like, even if I was interested in doing that, which I'm really not, the idea that he's here and might, like, walk in and see us, or God forbid we'd walk up there and he'd be having – I don't – no. None of that is ever going to happen. Just no.
Him, like, being up there and seeing you is bad. But what's worse is if it's, like, somebody you're ever going to see again, because then the next time he sees you, hey, Patrick. Hey, Don. You know, and it's just, you know, and you know, he's just picturing you in a swing, you know, just getting filled out like an application, and that's just bad. And then you're just, then you have to move to another country and change your name.
I did happen to bump into a guy there that I knew from being writers. We were actually colleagues, and we were both writers on a same site. And I was like, oh, hey. And he's like, looked at me kind of like, hey.
And here you are.
And we're kind of like, hey. You know, and the thing is, it wasn't just like sex positive people, but there were also, the woman who threw the party us is very active in like the local science fiction fandom community and stuff. So,
surprise.
So there are a bunch of science fiction geeks there and a bunch of like sexy pervert people. And it was a weird mix. And
hey, Don, it's a sex trick.
I basically tried absinthe for the first time and just spent almost the entire thing out on the back porch smoking cigarettes with the transvestites.
Okay. Smoking cloves.
Yeah, smoking cloves with the transvestites, who were very cool and had lots of great tips on where to buy cheap earrings.
Seriously, transvestites always have. They have the line and all that stuff. Not a lot, but many times in my life, I guess a couple, I found myself at some strange party where you look around and you go like, how did I get what steps did I take in my life or missteps that led me to this party here tonight? And a couple of those parties, transvestites have been there, and they are always the most normal, down-to-earth, like, they're always the most conversational and the most interesting and the most down-to-earth people at the entire place. All right.
Yeah, well, we were all just on the back porch going, can you believe these people?
On that note, let's just say Squires Electric brings you this program each and every day. You can contact them at squireselectric.com. That's 503-252-1609. 503-252. Doing some slurping out of a bottle over there.
I bought this brand new, like, one of these damn earth-friendly stainless water bottles. I specifically got one with, like, a flip-out spout, so I don't have to take the lid off to drink out of it. But the spout doesn't work, and so I go to drink out of it, and it just goes... It's like when you have a straw with a hole in it, and you try to drink out of it, and it goes... And you get air bubbles. And,
you know what I got here? I got this thing they call a cup. It's right here. Ah. All right. Squires Electric can be reached at 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. That is our website, Squires Electric. .com or 503-252-1609. They're licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. So if you are having difficulties with your electrical system at home, if you're going to be remodeling, if you're going to be expanding your house or your business, or you're going to be selling or renting, or you are perhaps the prospective buyer or renter, and you make sure that, if you're selling the house, you want to make sure that, you know, that it works properly and everything is, you know, on the up and up so that, you know, the new family doesn't move in and they, you know, flip the switch and then suddenly, you know what? That's the kind of publicity you don't need, friend. But if you're going to be moving into a house, you're going to be renting a place where you're going to be living, you want to make sure that everything works as advertised so that you don't get stuck with not just having to pay the bill, but, you know, you're stuck with moving into a place where you're not going to have power, you're not going to have heat, or you're not going to have, electricity to run your air conditioner once the first time you get a good heat wave or something. So take care of all of that stuff now at the outset. Same thing if you're a business owner. You want to make sure that you pass the inspection when it's coming up. Don't wait for the inspection. I mean, if something's wrong, basically, you know, it's the thing about... You know, there was still a lawyer to never ask a question of a client that you don't already know the answer to. Don't have the inspector come out to your place, to your business, unless you already know that you can pass it. Best way to find that out is just have Squires Electric come out and take a walk through themselves. They know what they're talking about, and they'll do it right, and they'll do it the first time, do it cheaply, so you know that you're going to pass the inspection the real time when it comes around. So it's 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. Proud sponsors of this, the Rick Emerson Radio Program. That is Squires Electric. .com. All right, how's your drinking working out?
I solved the problem.
You just took the thing out?
Well, there was some reason, for some reason it had a straw attached to it. And I guess if I was...
So the straw was still in the tube?
Yeah, well, there was a straw attached to it, and there doesn't need to be a straw. Apparently, if you
What's the point of having a straw if the whole thing has a drinking tube on the top of it already? That's ridiculous.
I mean, if you're just going to suck on it, then yes, there should be a straw, I guess. But why would you do that? You just want to...
How much did you pay for that?
$4.99.
Okay.
I got it at Walgreens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It works great now. See, that's me drinking water.
Sarah and Greg are going to be in here about 10, 12 minutes from now, so we'll clear out here in just a few. Maybe tomorrow we'll talk about, House. We'll do a recap. And I guess tomorrow we can recap tonight's House and then also last week. And then we'll talk a bit about Justified maybe later on this week or maybe tomorrow, because I know you've also caught up on Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah.
I've started watching Shameless, so we can talk about – we got all that kind of stuff to get through. I promised to get to this today, and people have been screaming at me about it here via email and whatnot. First of all, to the guy who was asking me a couple times about the eating, yes, I did, in fact, it just sounds like such a cliche to talk about, like, oh, the New York, the bagels, you don't even know. But the thing about New York is it's not like there isn't great food elsewhere. There is. I mean, there's great food in, like, you know, every city. It's not like you have to go to New York to get good food. The thing about going to New York is that, like, you can get great food, like, anywhere, any time of day or night. That's the thing. It's not that food in New York is better as such. It's just that in most cities... The places where you go to get, you know, to get great food, those places are, you know, open, and then, you know, they close. And they close at like 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock at night. I mean, unless you're in Vegas, but the stuff that's open 24 hours a day in Vegas is usually just gruel, you know? I mean, it's just stuff, that is only really good if you're like in vacation mode. So New York is really just about the availability of the food. And then also, because New York is a city with 9 billion people in it, and because those restaurants are open 24 hours a day, there's a heightened sense of competition because there's the 12 million people who already live there. And then there's all the tourists, which means that everybody is competing for the tourist dollars, and everybody is competing for the dollars of, you know, of just the average of the other 12 million New Yorkers, which means that the prices are constantly depressed by competition. So things in New York, relatively speaking, tend to be cheap, and they're always open. So as a result, I mean, as I think I said online, if it wasn't for the fact that you walk everywhere, I mean, I would have required like 2 seats to come back, because you just eat all the time, and everything is just like incredible, and everything is like, you know, it's fantastic, and you just want to, you know, so you just end up eating like all of this stuff that in any other city would probably just make you huge. So, the short answer is yes. There's just a lot of stuff there, and including this restaurant that I went to for lunch on Wednesday, which was sort of the exception to all of the stuff I just said, because it wasn't anything like your traditional New York restaurant or, you know, any of the places that you eat, like any deli or cafe or anything. And if anybody's ever gone to London and you see those Texas steakhouses they have in Europe, which are funny because they're like the British idea of what Texas and steakhouses are like. And so you go into these steakhouses in London, there'll be a guy going, "Why, hello, partner." And he's got like a huge hat on his head and like massive belt buckle. "Belly on up to the bar. We'll get you some meat for your eating because you're American in Texas." And it's, you know, and they just bring you these big plates of ribs or something. And it's, you know, with like a massive beer stein that's like the size of a car or something, and with huge Texas flags everywhere. And it's just like a lot of food that makes no sense. But so I went to this on Wednesday. I had lunch with somebody, and it's like, and you know, and it's of course the whole lunch with the expense account. So he's paying. So by God, you know, I was just like, you know, hey, take me wherever you like to eat. You know, I'm at your discretion, whatever you want to go. So we go to this place that is just exactly like one of these insane London, Texas steakhouses. So we walk in, and I swear to God, this isn't a gag. One of the gimmicks there is that they sell you. I mean, it's not like a butcher shop. It's like an actual restaurant. But the deal is, you buy your meat by the pound. Like when you're ordering your whatever. So you go up to this like meat bar, and a guy says, like, "Howdy, partner, welcome to the meat bar." And there's a huge menu behind, and it has like, you know, your brisket and your ribs and your sausages and your steak. And I mean, literally, you would just say like Well, I guess give me 2 pounds of brisket or whatever. Or I said, like, I don't know, I'll take 1.5 pounds of sausages or something. And so you would order pounds of meat. That's how you – it wasn't like a single or a double or whatever. You'd order your pounds of meat.
And you basically gauge how much food will fit into your stomach.
Exactly. And then they would go and put it on one of those, like, autopsy scales. And they go, all right. And the other gimmick is there's no plates. Now, there's like a cafeteria tray because it's like – you slide along and then you get your sides and stuff. But the deal is they just tear off a huge piece of butcher paper and they just go and they put the meat down in the middle of your butcher paper and then they just go and they wad it up and stick it on your so basically it's like you're in some weird Leatherface thing where it's like they would just get this like 2 pounds of meat, stick it on some butcher paper, wad it up, put it onto your cafeteria tray and then send you down. It was like I felt like I was in sort of like a Robert Bly book or something. Like I had to like put on an animal skin and hit a drum in the jungle and talk about, you know, rediscovering my manhood. And so then you slide along to get your sides, and the sides are all huge. And of course, I'm there with them.
Sounds kind of like a cross between Old Country Buffet and Build-A-Bear Workshop.
Yes, exactly. And so it's like I order the sausage, and of course I don't want to look like a pussy. You know, it's like I want to look masculine. And you're thinking like it's New York, like how you know, and everybody there is sort of spindly and frail. And, you know, I'm thinking, well, you know, I'll just get whatever he gets. And so I kind of duplicate the order of the guy I'm with. And it's like I'm just getting whatever he gets. And at first of all, I have to say the food is actually really, really good. And we go to sit down, of course, and you're sitting down at these like rough-hewn like picnic benches. Keep in mind, this is all like inside. I mean, it's in a huge, huge, especially by New York standards, where everything is tiny. It's in this huge restaurant with these sort of like faux, like rugged outdoor benches. And then it's like, and then where we're sitting, there's this mesh screen where you can see in the back where there's all this like firewood stacked up. And there's no fire anywhere, of course. There's no fireplace. There's no way to burn. It's just for ambience. There's like 3 cords of kindling and firewood stacked up because we're men.
What was this place called?
I don't even remember. I have to figure out the name of it. I'll have to look it up. I know the address, so I can figure out the name. And then they bring us, you know, would you like anything? And I was like, well, I'll have some coffee and a water. And the guy's like, I'll have whatever. And, of course, they bring it not just – they don't bring it in glasses. They bring it in huge, oversized mason jars because, you know, we're getting back to our – and I think it was, like, their idea of how, like, the simple people of the country, you know, eat. Hell, you know, if you're from the South or probably from Portland, I think it's, like, their idea –
it was rustic.
Yeah, their idea of how the plain people of the New West have their lunch. And so I'm looking across this guy who's, like, wearing, like, a tweed vest, you know, and he's drinking out of a mason jar and, like, eating and there's no silverware. So he's eating handfuls of meat off
of – Wildwood barbecue?
Probably. Okay. He's eating handfuls of meat off butcher paper and drinking out of a mason jar.
Oh, God.
You know? And then, you know, but again, while wearing like a tweed vest and with these like sort of round John Lennon spectacles and talking to me about, you know.
And you're in Manhattan.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. Also, you know, we're not in Lickskillet, Kansas. We're in Manhattan. So anyway, so I'm like, well, I'm not going to be shown up by this guy, you know, especially. And then I get all this weird Northwest pride going on, you know, like because it's like the restaurant is clearly meant to mimic what it's like to eat as a great outdoorsman, you know,
which
or like
you clearly are.
Clearly, if you're having like some Grizzly Adams Frontier meal and I'm like, I'm from the frontier, you know. And so I decide I'm not going to be outshone by this guy. So I'm just eating. I eat like every scrap of food in front of me. And I was fine all the way through lunch. I was fine. As we had our meeting afterward at the office, I was fine getting on the subway. I then got off the subway like 125th to call you guys, to call into the show.
And you did mention that you had eaten your weight in sausages.
I mentioned that I'd eaten a lot of sausages, which were really good, by the way. Then I get back on the subway, and that's when it just sort of hit me. Not even a sickness, but just that thing of your body going like, we're going to have to shut down and soon just so we can process it. It's like when you open like the wrong program or like some sort of a series of windows in your computer and your whole processor just starts grinding and and the mouse doesn't wiggle. And you realize that whatever your computer is doing is taking so much CPU energy that like you can't get anything done.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, I have got to get back to the hotel. So I made it into the hotel and I opened the door, got inside, bolted the door behind me, fell onto the bed. And I woke up there like 4 hours later, feeling much better, but clearly there was like some substantial processing
a meat coma.
It was unreal. It was just, it was like nothing I have ever experienced. It was, I mean, the food was really good, but I got to say, it was, you could feel like every pound of meat just, it was just dragging me down into some sort of hibernation coma. So there was that. Real quickly about so Book of Mormon the musical. That's the other thing I said that I was going to get to. I mean, the short answer is huge thumbs up. I mean, it was really, really good. Book of Mormon the musical, which is a three-handed effort that is Trey Parker, Matt Stone for South Park fame, and then Robert Lopez, who is the man behind Avenue Q, which you're a big fan of, which I have not seen, but it's really good. The production design is great. It's really elaborate. There's several very intricately choreographed song and dance numbers. I mean, it's a Broadway musical. It's not like it's some sort of like community theater or something. I mean, it's like a full on Broadway musical. You know, the huge the orchestra production and offstage voice actors and all of the people on stage. And again, a lot of numbers where there was like 20 or 30 people all doing some very carefully synchronized dance on stage. Huge, chorus themed production numbers. Where there's a lot of call and response from the different actors on stage when they're singing. There's a reprise of the main theme and everything. And then of course, then there's actually the whole plot. It is actually, there's actually a story and everything. I mean, it's a regular musical in every sense.
Isn't the story? It's about a new missionary.
Yeah,
and
in Uganda.
Yeah.
The entire thing, except for like the first 5 minutes, and there are no spoilers here, but the entire thing, except for the first 5 minutes, takes place in Uganda, where Elder Price has gone with his companion, Elder Cunningham. And like I said, I won't give anything else about the plot away, but it is the trials and travails of being a missionary in a strange land. And it's great. And it's relentlessly profane. I mean, unbelievably profane. I mean, even by South Park standards, it is relentlessly profane. There is, I think I met, so there's one moment in one of these choreographed numbers. There's a sequence where I think Hitler is performing oral sex on Jeffrey Dahmer, who is simultaneously humping the dead body of the protagonist's father. And then they're singing and dancing, and there's like a whole Busby Berkeley, like Hell's a Poppin' thing kind of going. And then you're just watching it, just going like, what? And so it's really good. And at the end, the summation of it is sweet and charming and, dare I say, sort of Christian in a way that only the South Park guys can really do, where they have the whole, like, what did we learn here today? And it's not cloying or manipulative, because South Park is really good at getting, like, the actual – South Park has heart, which I think is the difference between South Park and, like, Family Guy. And this is much the same, where at the end they sum it up. They don't do the what I learned here today thing, but in those terms. But it's basically that, and it actually is. It's very touching and sweet and beautiful, and of course the songs are excellent. I was a little disappointed that none of the material from the Mormon episode of South Park made it in terms of the songs, like that whole like dum 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 song that they have about the Mormons. The only thing that made it in from the episode of the show was they do a little bit of that. Quick backstory about how Joseph Smith discovered the golden plates. But even again, that's not from the show as such. They just do a similar device of doing for those who came in late and then, our story, they do like our story so far. And then they do a flashback of the angel Moroni telling Joseph where to find the plates.
I wonder if that's a Viacom owning, their material kind of a thing.
It could be. It could also be that they just felt like they were trying to prove that they could do something totally and separate. Because even Team America had stuff from South Park. That montage song in Team America is from South Park.
Yeah.
So they might have been trying to stand on their own, once and for all, just say, like, this is absolutely and totally separate from South Park. The one thing I will say is that probably the one audience that – will, I don't want to even say let down by this, but maybe who might be a little bit surprised. How do I put this? The audience who's going to like this the most is probably not the South Park audience. It's probably going to be traditional Broadway viewers. That's who I saw it with because it's still in preview. So it wasn't people who were South Park fans. It was people who like to see musicals. That was most – the audience there was probably in their 40s. Most of the people there, the average age was probably 45 and up. Give you an idea of the audience, the guy next to me was having a conversation with the guy in the row behind me. They knew each other. And the guy next to me literally – I wrote this down. He literally said before the show started, he goes, so anyway, the thing is, if you have less than $500 million, you really have no hedge against inflation. So that is the audience that was going to see this. And then there was me. But if you're a South Park fan – and when I say you'll be let down, I don't even mean you'll be let down. It's just that – it is exactly what it sounds like. It's the South Park guys doing a Broadway musical. I think part of the thing is that, like, South Park the movie was such a game changer because no one expected it. It's like we didn't expect it to be a musical, and then you didn't expect it to be as unbelievably mind-blowingly brilliant. And it's like you just walked out of there going like, oh, my God, they shattered your expectations. And then, of course, Team America was marionettes and puppets, so that was sort of its own thing. You know, this – this isn't like a game changer in the sense that it's not going to do to you what South Park the movie did, because now it's like you've raised the bar in your own head so far because you know what they're capable of. So which is not to say that it's bad. It's not bad. It's great. It's really, really good. Don't go in expecting them to reinvent the wheel. I mean, if anything, it's the opposite. They don't really take Broadway and drag it like into the South Park world. They kind of take the South Park sensibility and they put it into the Broadway mold. So all of the dynamics and the story pacing and the three-act structure that they traditionally use in Broadway, all of that is intact. They really have fit themselves into the Broadway mold, not the other way around. But it's very good.
And I think I may have mentioned this when you were on the phone. I know, I follow both Penn Jillette and Teller on Twitter, and a couple of days after you saw it, they went to see it, and Teller was writing on Twitter that at the intermission curtain, Penn just turned to him and said, "This is effing amazing."
Yeah, yeah.
And Teller said, "I'm not usually one for standing ovations at all. I really just don't do it." He said, "And as soon as the curtain came down, I was just on my feet."
Yeah,
he said it was great.
It's really, really, really good. That's what I mean. And so I don't mean to sound as though it's not. It's just I think people may be a little bit disappointed if they're going and expecting that it's going to like shatter the rules of Broadway, and it's a totally different kind of, you know, way to do. I mean, it is very, and this is to their credit, this is smart. It is a traditional three-act musical. It's just that it's a musical in which the story and the dialogue and the lyrics and the sensibility are just, as I think I said on the phone call to you guys, there were three different shows going on, basically. There was the show in my head where I was astounded at how much Mormon theology they got into it. There was the show of actually watching it on stage and the actual show as it was unfolding in front of me. And the third show was watching the audience, where you could tell that it was an audience that kind of knew about South Park because maybe they read about it. You know, there was an article in The Atlantic about it, and they knew that South Park, they knew that they were a little edgy. And the guy actually next to me, the Mr. $500 million, he said he was there because he read, you know, well, because I read Sondheim, his column a lot, and Sondheim had a lot of great things to say about it. So, you know, good enough for Stephen Sondheim, good enough for me. And he was clearly there because he'd heard from reputable, you know, theater critics that it was good. He was obviously not a South Park fan. And I looked over and he was just like, his mouth was just hanging open. I mean, about the moment that they have a major religious figure having sex with a frog. And this has been revealed, so this is not a spoiler. About the moment when they are singing a song whose refrain is "F you, God," I look over at that guy at the third chorus of "F you, God." The guy just kind of, I could see him sort of like tilting his head a little bit, like he was trying to recalibrate his brain.
Yeah.
So it's really, really good.
Well, and Avenue Q is which Robert Lopez co-wrote. Is an excellent, excellent and hilarious musical, but at the same time, yeah, it's the same thing. I saw the road production here in Portland at like the Schnitz or wherever, and I was surprised by how many people were sitting around me that were older and obviously had no idea what they were seeing.
Right.
They just had season tickets to whatever was next.
Yeah.
And this thing started up, and it looked like Sesame Street, and it had puppets. And then when they start singing about how, you know, the internet is for porn and making gay jokes, and they're swearing.
Right.
And there was this couple sitting right in front of me that were about 70. And the woman, to her credit, the woman sitting in the middle, she was like with, I think, her husband and her daughter, who looked like she was in her 40s. And the woman actually found it delightful, but there were a lot of times that she just kept turning and going, "Oh my!"
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my!
Yeah, there was.
She was not expecting it at all.
There were no walkouts, but there were a lot of people who, and there were a lot of great references in the show itself, in Book of Mormon the musical, to Broadway. And to some of the cliches and some of the recent, but there were several Lion King in jokes, references sort of to that, and there were a lot of there was one song in particular that was a reference to Broadway's not recent but Broadway's fixation on presuming to speak for poor or disenfranchised people, because a lot of times you'll see some theatrical production where
Rent, for example.
Where the characters are all either in some foreign land where it's destitute, but they're happy, you know, but they're happy singing natives, you know, who, like, you know, even though they live in some, you know, third world country, you know, they sing and they dance and they embrace their plight in life. And there's a lot of shots taken at the idea of you know, like lily white Broadway producers attempting to show you what the native peoples do in their dirt poor lands.
Yeah.
There is a, and again, this is not a spoiler, there is a moment where this lily white chorus of Mormon missionaries, they sing a song called We Are Africa. And that is very, and so there's, a, and, there, and a lot of that is put, you get the sense that it's put there just to sort of push the audience a little bit. You know, that it's, there is in fact, during the song F You God, which is sung by this, you know, by this, this village of Ugandans. They're singing this song, F You God, and at one point they sort of sing to the audience, and they say if you the chorus is F You God, and it's about how they're living in like the worst place on earth where everyone has AIDS and warlords run everything. And so basically everyone has AIDS, the warlords occasionally come through the village and just rape and kill, and they're singing this song. And the song's chorus is F You God, and they get about halfway through and they turn to the audience and they all say, if you are if you're offended by what we say, try living here, you know, for half a day, blah, 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 blah. And it is very much a reference to, you know, to a lot of musicals that, that I think make tourism out of depicting people who live in very hard scrabble circumstances, where it's a vicarious sort of, and then we saw a play about the most charming downtrodden group of people with AIDS. It was wonderful.
Well, yeah, and almost every season there is something anymore on Broadway where it's all about the native people
right.
playing their drums and,
totally.
And wearing their dashikis.
Yeah, and there's so there's some of that which is great. So yeah, I really 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 strongly recommend it, and it's it it is, and I got to tell you, and the biggest testament. And Trey Parker would want to hear this probably. This is the thing he could – this is the compliment he would want. That after only seeing Book of Mormon the musical once, and that was last Tuesday, I woke up this morning and I was walking around the house and I told Laura I still have several songs that cycled that are stuck in my head that I heard once.
Well, Parker on his own is just a brilliant songwriter. And then, yeah, that he's working with some great people here too. So
I will say this. The refreshment. First of all, it's interesting that you can, you know, see a thing called Book of Mormon and that you can be sitting there with a huge glass of red wine.
Huh.
How much would you imagine a glass of red wine went there?
Ooh, $12.50.
That'd be $17.
$17.
So there you go. But your refill was $12, so you got that. All right. On that note, we should wrap it up. Greg and Sarah are going to be in here soon with FunEmploymentRadio.com. Let's see. Join us tomorrow when – what is tomorrow? Tuesday? Tuesday. Join us tomorrow. We'll talk about Breaking Bad. You're caught up in that. We'll talk about Shameless. We'll talk about tonight's episode of House and so forth. Oh, and I have a little bit about stuff about Spider-Man the musical. We'll talk about that tomorrow as well. We're going to thank our guests, including Mr. Aaron Duran from GeekInTheCity.com, also Oregonian music editor Ryan White. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of today's Legion of News episode, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. As always, we thank you for listening. The Rick Emerson Radio Program comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Dawn Taylor, advanced technology and magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa, and the Rick Emerson Radio Extravaganza. Made possible by a generous grant from y'all. So thank you. It means a lot. Get to spread the word, if you will. It is Monday, March 21st, 2011, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, thank you for listening. Be safe. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.